dare you.
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we are in Columbus, Ohio. You know, as we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, the big vote tomorrow on SB 5 finally going to happen. The right vote, in my opinion, is no on issue number two. And look, it is, in my opinion, a big steaming pile of number two. Unfortunately, there are folks running around talking to people, and the education process, as we speak, continuing. But as you look around, to me, this battle is about more than just collective bargaining for public employees. It's more than just about collective bargaining in general. It's about the two Americas. It's about how do we close the gap between the 1% and the rest of us. And you look at the new census data that has just come out and some new analysis of it. I don't know how you cannot draw any other conclusion that the wealth class is winning. It's class war, and as Buffett said, his class is winning. When you've got nearly 50 million people now living below the poverty line, 16% of the people in this country, it's mind-blowing. And you look at the Pew Research Center. They've done some new analysis of census data, and big surprise, the wealth gap now between the younger generation and the older generation at the widest point it has ever been. You look at the typical household headed by someone over 65, they now have a net worth 47 times that greater that of someone 35 and under. And you go back to 2005, and just a couple of years ago, that was half of that rate. And 25 years ago, it was five times that amount. I mean, so what's amazing to me is as we keep going forward, the gap between those who have and those who do not have keep growing wider, and the gap between people who had jobs and don't keep growing wider. And you know, you look at what's going on with this, 47 times. And it's really the result of this economic downturn. It's the result of students taking on more student loan debt because we've shifted the burden of paying for education from we the people to the student. And you know, they're sitting around waiting, hey, when am I going to get my job? When am I going to be able to start my life, buy my house, raise my family? Well, because of the economic downturn, that's not happening. And include that, the fact that the housing bubble burst. So, you know, most people have their net worth tied up in their houses. The younger generation, they're the ones who've kind of gotten the short end of the stick. While on the other side, you see people over 65, they've got Social Security, they've got Medicare. They've been saved from poverty, as they should be. But what's going on is the right's trying to exploit that. And give the wealth class credit. They do know how to slice and dice and keep working people at each other's throats and keep us separated. You know, your white collar, your blue collar, your union, your non-union, your white, your black, whatever the slicing and dicing is, they're masterful at it. And I don't know if you remember, I talked about this Prescott George Bush. The Bush family, you know, they like to reuse those names. But he's Jeb's kid. And he said that he'd have a better chance. I think he's in his mid-20s. He said he'd have a better chance seeing a UFO than a Social Security check. And again, causing that divide between the young and old. And I look at this article from the AP pointing this out, and it's exactly the point. It's as this super-duper debt commission or this super-duper secret super commission comes up with its recommendations on how to cut $1.2 trillion, where do you think the younger generation wants them to look? Yeah, gut that Social Security, take away Medicare. That's kind of the push as we move forward. You look at some of the numbers, median net worth of households headed up by someone 65 and or older, about $170,000 total for someone under 35, about $3,500, which is down 60, almost 70%. From just 25 years ago, according to the Pew Research numbers. And again, what it comes back down to is it's the economic collapse, it's the housing bubble, it's the student loans, it's all of that, all wrapped up into a big, nice, neat ball designed to destroy us. And you know, you stop and you think about some of the things, some of these numbers that have come out of this, a 47-to-1 wealth gap. 37% of the young people have zero or a net worth. Compare that to just 8% of seniors. And you look at this, and what I find absolutely amazing is that the idea here and the reason that they're pushing this, destroy Social Security, and They cited a couple of professors in this piece that just grabbed my attention. They said, well, you know, the elderly people have the safety net. And, well, the young people don't. So that's the reason that everything's fine. And they start going into the idea of let's start cutting down on Social Security. Let's cut back on, start shifting it around. Instead of saying, you know, how do we help these people who are struggling with student loan debt? How do we help these folks who are underwater in their mortgage? It's how do we destroy? How do we take away? How do we kill this? And in conservative world, bringing it back here to Columbus, the idea is to divide not only non-union and union workers, but to divide union workers. And I love the conservative world argument, which is, you know, you want to lay off a firefighter in this state. Oh, it's going to cost us thousands of dollars. And oh, you know, if we do that, We're not gonna be able to steal wages away from that senior guy. You low seniority firefighters, you're gonna lose your job. Instead of saying, you know, why didn't we sit down and discuss this right from the beginning? Why didn't we sit down and negotiate, do what collective bargaining is all about? If you're gonna have shared sacrifice, you should have shared sacrifice. But you look here in Ohio, I still think about American Greetings, the company, where my grandmother lives, that the state of Ohio gave $105 million to keep them here. And then they went and they shook down the local community for more millions. And where do you think that money's gonna come from? Well, you know, as the one guy said, we need the ability to cut the wages of policemen and teachers and firemen, public sector. We need to be able to do that. We need to be able to take it away. But we're not in the middle of a class war. And you look at what John Boehner said. He was on with Christine Amanpour. He said, you know, I understand people's frustration. Yeah, I get it. I understand their concerns and, frankly, understand that we have differences in America. He says, we're not going to engage in class warfare. The president's out there doing that every day. He says it's not so much that redistribution of income the president is talking about. It's a shared, much fairer sense of sacrifice. And there doesn't seem to be that sense among people here to sacrifice is being shared, because they point to the taxes and the tax cuts and people who benefit. And he goes on to say the top 1% pay 38% of the income taxes in America. You know, how much more do you want them to pay? Let's take all the money, he said, away from the rich. It wouldn't even be enough to put a dent in our current budget deficit, much alone our debt. And you look at the numbers, the true numbers, and it's nice that he's keeping the wealth line. But in 2010, the richest 1% of people in this country, they own 70% of all the financial assets. They're paying 38% of the taxes. Okay. But they own 70% of the financial assets. They benefited from 2002 to 2006. Three-quarters of all economic growth went to their pockets. I think that's a pretty damn good deal, and I'd love to have it. And if you look at the CBO numbers recently, the top 1% of the population with the highest income, they saw their household income grow by 275% in the period 1979 to 2007. People at the bottom saw theirs only grow at 18%. Those of us in the middle, 40%. So you're talking about less than 1% a year. Last time I checked, my electric bill went up. Last time I checked, the price of gasoline has skyrocketed. Food prices are up. I'm missing the tears. 275% increase. And he's complaining, well, they pay 38% of the income taxes. Well, yeah, dum-dum. That's because they control the wealth. Kind of makes sense? I sure hope so. Look at the fact of the matter is the top 1% owns 40% of the nation's wealth. They take over a quarter of the nation's income. You can go right down the list. They only own 5% of the nation's debt. 5% of the nation's debt, the top 1%. We own the rest of the debt. So they own the assets. We own the debt. Who's got the money here to pay the taxes? Certainly not you and me. So we're going to be here talking with folks all night tomorrow as well. Hopefully by the time tomorrow we get on air, the decision will have been made. There will be a landslide victory. But tonight we're going to talk to people who are knocking on doors. We're going to talk to folks who are making phone calls, why they're here, who's here, all of that. You can email us during the program, rick@thericksmithshow.com. We are unable to take phone calls, so look forward to your emails. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, you're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at thericksmithshow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
One way you can tell that a bank is in trouble is that it suddenly starts buying full-page ads in newspapers to tell us what great shape it's in and what a fine job it's doing for our communities. Such a PR push is now being made by Bank of America, which, despite its happy face ads, is in a heap of hurt. How big of a heap? So big that it's trying to share the hurt with you and me. In the recent Wall Street collapse, B of A took advantage of the crisis to bulk up its empire. Using $45 billion in bailout money from us taxpayers, the giant gobbled up two troubled financial powers, investment house Merrill Lynch and mortgage hustler Countrywide Financial. It's now choking on those mergers, as well as its own executive incompetence. Its credit rating has been downgraded, its stock price has plummeted, its CEO is desperately trying to raise cash and save his job by firing 36,000 employees, and it has infuriated its own customers by trying to impose a $5 monthly fee on debit card users. Now, though, CEO Brian Moynihan has a dandy plan to lighten his load by dumping a big chunk of it on us taxpayers. He's trying to transfer a mess of bad investments now held by the Merrill Lynch subsidiary into B of A's consumer banking unit. Why? Because that unit has about $1 trillion in customer deposits that are insured by Uncle Sam. So if Merrill's sorry investments cause the banking unit to fail, the feds would be there to rescue it. A banking expert has commented that there is always an enormous temptation to dump the losers on the insured institutions. We should have fairly tight restrictions on that. This is Jim Hightower saying, fairly tight? We should have totally tight restrictions, as in, no, you cannot do that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get started, come on. Get started, get started. Let's get it started.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So you may remember, it was just a couple of days after the election in 2010 that Ohio Governor John Kasich came out and said, well, you know, if you think you're going to stop us, you're crazy. You will not stop us. We will beat you. And he went on to say, if you're not on the bus, we'll run you over with the bus. And he said, I'm not kidding. Well, here we are, just a couple of days over a year. Looks like he fell off the bus, and maybe the bus is going to back over him. I've got a bus driver here with me who would love, to take that bus and run him over. Alicia Combs, bus driver from the Columbus area. Alicia, thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, you listen to something like that from a guy who's 2 days in office. That's got to make you angry.
Well, I don't think he really knew who he was affecting. You know, we heard, you know, teachers and firefighters and the nurses who we really support, but I don't think he really understood that, you know, you have 600-plus members who are bus drivers and mechanics who were saying, wait a minute, you know, you're throwing us out there in a bad light, but we're here to fight just as well as everybody else is.
And, you know, I lived in Cleveland for years growing up, and, you know, the bus drivers, that's how I got to work most days in a city like Columbus, you're a very valuable commodity.
Yeah, a lot of people depend on the services that we put out there, and I've shared with some of our members as well as family members, if everybody could do it, they would be doing it, and it's a special group.
I couldn't do it. You know, I said earlier, you know, I drove a truck for years. That's different. Driving a bus, I'd be running people over daily. In fact, I'd be going after them, and I give you credit for not.
Thank you.
But it's a very specialized thing, and it takes a lot of patience. And like you said, not everyone can do it. So I'm always amazed that, you know, they've got folks out there who say, well, you know, I could do that job, or, oh, it's not that important. It is that important.
It is. I mean, you have to have respect for the bus that you're driving, the people who are there on the bus, because as soon as that person steps on the bus, we're responsible for them. And you want to make sure that they're getting to where they need to go, plus you want to make sure that they get there safely. Not only are we driving the bus, we're looking out for other motorists, we're looking out for pedestrians, and just whether everything could change. So when you talk about listening to what people say you may not deserve or what you shouldn't get, a lot of folks have not sat in that seat and know what we deal with on a daily basis.
Maybe so, Governor Kasich should have sat in that seat before he opened his mouth.
I think had he sat on the bus and just drove one of our lines, by the time he got to the end of the line, he would change his mind drastically.
Right, and in a theoretical position, caring about others, caring about the big picture instead of his narrow-minded focus, which is stealing wages from you and other people. Why is this SB5 thing such a big deal for you today? Why?
I think today, more so than the wages I was just sharing earlier, the wages, of course, is a major factor. Retirement is always something you want to look at. But the number one thing for me is being able to have my leadership team, our union leadership team, to be able to go to the table and negotiate working conditions. That is my biggest thing that keeps me out here on a daily basis, keep me making the calls, is I want to feel as though I'm going to a job where I can be safe, a job where people are going to value me and understand that, you know, I'm just not out here just driving around. I take what I do very seriously in providing a service for our community, which, in fact, make everything better, because if we're not there to bring people to work, you know, where are you going to get your lunch from? Where are you going to go and buy your clothes from? Because a lot of what we do, getting people to where they need to go, affects everything here in the city.
Yeah, I think you hit on probably, for me, the key point in all of this. You know, as someone who drove a truck for years, as a union member as well, I would go out and I would inspect that truck. And if there was something wrong, it got fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the ability to say, I'm not taking it until it's fixed.
Correct.
Without that kind of support, without that kind of voice on the job, which is what I think they want to take away as well, you're putting the general public at risk as well.
Exactly, yes. So, I mean, more so than anything, like I've said, I just want to be able to have a job that I can come to and be able to sit down and say, hey, in order for me to effectively do my job, this is what I need, and not get any type of resistance. You know, it's feeling as though, well, no, you don't deserve that, or no, we really don't need to, you know, worry about fixing this. There's nothing wrong. But being able to stand firm in what I believe in, and having that leadership team, like I said, our union president and other officials, to be able to come and know that they have our support as operators and mechanics and cashiers and other members that are a part of our representative membership.
Right. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Lisa Combs. She's a bus driver here in the Columbus, Ohio area, also a volunteer going around knocking on doors, talking to people. And as you go around talking to folks, knocking on doors, what kind of response are you getting? What kind of discussions going on?
We've had a lot of good support. A lot of the doors that we've knocked on, people understand. We've ran into a lot of other union members, so, you know, it's like you're preaching to the choir, but they really support our cause that's out there. Some of the opposition that we've had, you can tell that it's just based on the general information that they're getting. One of the
Fox News people, the right wing crowd.
Exactly. I had a call the other day. I was on a call, and I actually had someone ask me, you know, what is it about this SB5? And don't read me the script. Why in your own words should I vote no on issue 2? And again, just what I shared about, you know, our working conditions. And I just shared with him why it's important to me. And, you know, at that point he says, well, that's good enough for me. So you have my support. So when people are able to look inside what they're just getting in the news or in the newspaper and understand why it affects you personally, then they can sort of understand.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of people, they have no connection to collective bargaining. You know, I have people who have said, well, what does it matter? I'm never going to be part of it. How does it affect me? And I think the safety issue that you pointed out is really a very dramatic one. I mean, if you've got buses driving down the road with no brakes because the driver was unable to say, hey, I'm not taking that, because I've got truck driver friends who work for non-union companies, who the boss says, oh, we'll fix them next week. Go on, you take them down the road. And, you know,
it makes a difference. Actually, this is my first union job, and I came from a non-union family, and I come from a strong union family, and this was my first union job, and I've worked both sides, so I understand how important it is to have a union. There's some jobs out there that without a union, I don't think I could work there, so I'm very happy for the support that we have.
As a rank-and-file member of the Transport Workers Union, you know, are you seeing other members maybe weren't so strong union supporters in the past coming around and going, I get it, they're attacking us, and now is the time to kind of pull together?
We are having that support, not only for our active members, but our retired members have actually played a major role. So even from, you know, their retirement benefits that they get, they understand how important this is to them. They may not be driving the buses or fixing them today, but they know how well it impacts them. And plus, they've also, the retirement team that have come, they've sort of open the door for us new drivers and mechanics that are coming in. So it's nice to see that even though they're not in the mix of it, they're saying, hey, we were where you're at now, and we understand the fight, so you're not in it alone. So our general membership, our active membership, as well as our retired membership, has been awesome throughout this whole.
It's the last question I've got for you, Alicia. You know, the right loves to throw out, well, you know, this is the only way that we can solve our budget problems. The only way, by stealing wages from you, is the only way we can balance the budgets. Evidently, by stealing your health care, that's the only way we can balance our budget. And I go, there's got to be another way. I mean, if we're in this together, there's shared sacrifice. We should at least have a conversation of how that's going to look, as opposed to I'm going to put a gun to your head and steal it from you.
I think I have family members who've worked in the city and state offices, and I've seen where they've already given up so much to help balance the budget. I think there's just some areas in which you shouldn't have to cut things, because once you start cutting, you cut service, you start cutting the quality. And just with things as simple as with our current governor, you know, as far as, you know, he chose not to live in the mansion, but he wanted to live at home. And nobody looks at those expenses and how we're paying taxes and that. They don't want to push that out in the forefront, but then they want us to sacrifice health care and, you know, wages and everything.
So hold, pull this back a second. He doesn't want to live in the governor's mansion. He wants to live at home, so we're paying for both. You're paying for both residences?
Yes. Yes, we are.
And nobody seems to have a problem with that?
No.
Really?
Well, of course, the union bodies have a problem with it.
Because I could easily solve some of your budget problems. You have to live where you have to live, man. Yeah. That's what we'll pay for. You want to live at home, you pay for yourself.
Exactly.
And you pay for the excess transportation of the police force that goes with you and all of that.
Yeah.
Maybe that will be the next campaign. Because hopefully tomorrow when this vote goes down, and I guess the polls open at 7 o'clock?
6:30 in the morning.
6:30 to 7:30. Close at 7:30. Hopefully that will be a massive wave of folks running the bus, so to speak, over this governor, and maybe bringing him back down to earth. Alicia Combs, I appreciate the time. You've been great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break right back after this. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
One way you can tell that a bank is in trouble is that it suddenly starts buying full-page ads in newspapers to tell us what great shape it's in and what a fine job it's doing for our communities. Such a PR push is now being made by Bank of America, which, despite its happy face ads, is in a heap of hurt. How big of a heap? So big that it's trying to share the hurt with you and me. In the recent Wall Street collapse, B of A took advantage of the crisis to bulk up its empire. Using $45 billion in bailout money from us taxpayers, the giant gobbled up two troubled financial powers, investment house Merrill Lynch and mortgage hustler Countrywide Financial. It's now choking on those mergers, as well as its own executive incompetence. Its credit rating has been downgraded, its stock price has plummeted, its CEO is desperately trying to raise cash and save his job by firing 36,000 employees, and it has infuriated its own customers by trying to impose a $5 monthly fee on debit card users. Now, though, CEO Brian Moynihan has a dandy plan to lighten his load by dumping a big chunk of it on us taxpayers. He's trying to transfer a mess of bad investments now held by the Merrill Lynch subsidiary into B of A's consumer banking unit. Why? Because that unit has about $1 trillion in customer deposits that are insured by Uncle Sam. So if Merrill's sorry investments cause the banking unit to fail, the feds would be there to rescue it. A banking expert has commented that there is always an enormous temptation to dump the losers on the insured institutions. We should have fairly tight restrictions on that. This is Jim Hightower saying, fairly tight? Uh-uh. We should have totally tight restrictions, as in, no, you cannot do that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity.
Exposing
for our
GOP half truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com here in Columbus, Ohio, at the Ohio AFL-CIO headquarters. Tomorrow, the big vote. Again, hoping for big turnout, big numbers, and we will be here tomorrow night as well. I've got Vincent Alvarez, president of the New York City Central Labor Council, here in Columbus with me. Vinny, thanks for taking time for me.
Appreciate it. It's great to be here. We're in the midst of, obviously, a big battle, and it's all hands on deck.
New York, kind of a long way away from Columbus, Ohio.
A long way away, but...
What brought you to Columbus, Ohio from New York City?
Well, it's the battle for all of us and for all of our future working people. We know how important it is. Our affiliates know how important it is. They've been engaged. We've been talking about it for months. We know... We know that this is not just a battle here for the working people in Ohio, so we wanted to get out here and do our part to push back, draw the line in the sand here in Ohio, and make sure that we have a victory here on Tuesday night.
Have you brought some of your members out? And
we have members from a lot of our different unions. We have members here from AFSCME, members from TWU, members from members from painters, IBEW, AFT, a ton of teachers running around the state helping us out. So, yeah, we have a good broad-based effort.
This is kind of the front lines of the class
war
right now.
Absolutely, and we get it. We understand it. We know how important it is. We had the ability to come out here and to share some of our resources and to add some value to the program, which has really been just fascinating to watch. The AFL-CIO has done just a terrific job making sure that they have a smart, strategic campaign, which they've run out here, and we wanted to make sure that we added to it. You know, we have folks here from California as well, and it's really inspiring to see everybody come together like this, recognize the problem, recognize that we all have to participate and do what we can to really make sure that this is stopped right here and right now, and I think we're going to do that.
It goes back to the point of an injury to one being an injury to all.
No question about it. It's a critical component, and I think as these attacks become broader and as they become more widespread and as these anti-worker legislators and governors throughout the country want to take this type of action against working people, we got to take it right back to them, and we got to make sure that we're all helping each other out in this fight. This isn't just a fight for the building trades. It's not just a fight for the public sector workers. It's not just a fight for the private sector workers. These are all connected, and we need to have a broad-based response and make sure that we're all sharing in all of the logistics necessary to make sure that we're effective when we respond.
And I mean, this isn't just an attack on firefighters and cops and public sector workers. It's an attack on everybody, because if it happens to them, it goes back to the old Pastor Niemöller quote. You know, first they came for this person
that's
and this
correct.
Person. Well, who's left to come for you?
That's right, Rick. And it even goes broader than that, because it's an attack on all working people. Because we've always been, the labor movement has always been the greatest institution for protecting the middle class, for fighting for the middle class, working families, all working class families, and creating this economy that does work for all. So we've been the catalyst to try to, you know, to use their words against them, to be the ones that lift all boats.
All boats, sure.
That's right. So we've done that. And when we're under attack, what happens, as we've seen over the past three decades in this country, when union membership declines, we've seen the levels of disparity grow to just unreasonable and, I would even say, unethical levels. We have to fight back. We have to, all of us, recognize that this attack is beyond, and it's bigger than just unionized workers, too. Yes, collective bargaining rights are something that which we will always fight for. But if the working men and women of this country continue to be under the level of attack that they have been, all workers, unionized workers and non-union workers, we're never going to get the broad-based level of economic expansion that we need and economic prosperity that we need in order to do it in a way that's meaningful for working families in this country.
Right. You know, I've talked about my grandfather's generation for some time now. The World War II generation, they came back. Not only did they fight the war against fascism, they came back and they fought the battles in the workplace so that their kids didn't have to. Sadly, that attack hasn't stopped. And now's the time where pretty much everything my grandfather's generation fought for is about to be wiped out.
That's correct. And it's a tough thing. You know, I have two teenage-level children. They're getting ready to go off to college. And, I mean, you just look at the situation when you talk about, you know, the future. All of the tremendously high levels of debt that they're burdened with students today, and then they're coming out and they don't have even the job prospects being as bleak as they are.
Yeah.
The future for the younger generation today, and I think they get it and they understand that labor is out there fighting for them, not and we are not just you know, we're not just out there fighting for ourselves, we're fighting for our workers.
I think they get it.
I think they get it, absolutely.
Which is why you see, you know, tens of thousands of across
sure.
the country out in the streets.
Yep.
Because they've been told you work hard, you go to college, you get an education, that's your ticket to the middle class.
Right.
All most of them are seeing now are $20,000, $30,000 in student loan debt.
We've seen, and I know I've seen in New York City, and I've seen a tremendous level of camaraderie and out here, and I've seen a level of participation from a broad-based group in the labor movement. But we've seen that in New York City also. We've seen it recently. You know, everybody talks about in New York City the Occupy Wall Street movement, obviously, which is something that we've seen not only in New York but throughout the country and throughout the world. I think it's very predictable with the level of anger and frustration, the general level of frustration that working people are feeling.
And the inequality and the lack of opportunity and the bleak look of the future.
Right. So we see that there, and we see not only just labor groups coming out and supporting them and supporting fights like we do here, but we see community groups coming out. We see our allies that we work for from communities, and we see student groups coming out, and we see faith-based groups coming out. So this really is a broad-based fight because I think most people in America kind of get it. You know, when you reduce it to its simplest common denominator, people understand it. The process today just isn't working for everyday Americans. They work hard. They get up in the morning. They play by the rules. They do everything that they're supposed to do, and they feel like they're constantly behind the eight ball, and they realize that there has to be some fundamental change in this country. And I think that part of that change is going to take place on Tuesday night.
I'm hoping. You know, you what you laid out is the right wing taking it. What they do is they take advantage of that, saying, well, gee, you know, your opportunities aren't so great. You're struggling to get by. But look at those select few, those people who have collective bargaining rights, those firefighters, those cops, those teachers who have health care. They've got pensions. You don't have those. Why should they? That seems to be their message.
It really,
which is kind of backwards if you think about it.
It is, and it reduces. I think it reduces it to a level that is really what's wrong with dealing with problems. I would say it's a way of approaching it that I think is I would even consider it to be unethical. Don't look at the problems of other people that have that they are facing. To no fault of their own. They haven't, you know, they've been playing by the rules. And now what happens is you're going to have working people come in. You're going to have everyday working people. You're going to have unionized workers. They're going to try to pit worker against worker.
Well, they're doing it here with this SB5.
And they're going to say, listen, you know, you're working hard. Your conditions are tough. Why should the unionized worker be the person that's going to have more than you? Doesn't make any sense to us. Doesn't make sense to you. And misery loves company, as we've always been told. And that's what I think the forces of working people are trying to are now trying to create this attitude. And I think it's very harmful to American society in general.
But I go
we
back
are
to
all
the,
on the same side.
I go back to the labor people. to the robber baron, railroad magnate Jay Gould, who said I could easily pay half the working class to kill the other half. And what you see is they're masters at slicing and dicing us up. Just the other day, I read an article talking about SB5, about how, well, if you save collective bargaining, it'll be those greedy graybeards with all the seniority who will be keeping their jobs. And all you younger guys, all you younger union members, you're going to be out in the street. And it's masterful division, but it's kind of a screwed-up frame.
Look, I think, as I said, I think working people, not just unionized workers, who are under tremendous pressure themselves, but I think all working people are getting it now. I think the wool's been pulled over their eyes for too long, and they realize that something's not right in America. Something is not right in America, and they're beginning to ask the question, who's on your side? And they see that the labor movement is on their side.
Are you seeing that as you're knocking on folks' doors?
Absolutely. Everybody is educated on the issue. They know what it's about. We were out there today. We didn't even have to educate them. It was one of the easiest canvassings that we ever had to do. They know about this issue. They know where they stand on it. And they have very strong feelings on it. And that's why I think we have a good, a lot of momentum going into Tuesday night.
So the more people that you're talking to, once we affirm that collective bargaining rights is something we should be having,
sure.
The question then becomes, where do you go from there? How do we get people who have never been a member of a union or never enjoyed the benefits of collective bargaining, how do we get them into the fold after this is over?
Well, the first thing we have to do is to make sure that we shore up the fight that we have right now. We got to make sure that collective bargaining rights are protected, and that's what we're doing right here in Ohio. Then the next thing we have to do is we have to make sure that we're reaching out in a very broad way, and we're working with not only our unions, but we're working with community groups. We're working, as I said, with student groups and groups like veterans groups, people who are really hurting. I mean, somebody asked me recently, well, what is this all about? What are you doing? And I said, look, it's about the millions of Americans today, literally almost 50 million Americans who need to have government assistance to provide them with a level of food tonight.
Food stamps,
right. The 15 million Americans whose mortgages are
underwater
and whose houses are worth less than what they owe on it. It's about the thousands of homeless veterans that are sleeping out in the street tonight. It's about so much. It really is, and there are fundamental problems in this country. It's about the millions of Americans that we see that want to work, that can't find a full-time job, or the ones who are underemployed or no longer employable. I mean, there is so much that this is about, and I think that the labor movement is on the right side of this issue, and people understand it. They're out there. They're fighting not only for collective bargaining rights as the basis, as a fundamental basis for protection for workers, for a voice out at work, for the right to have their voices heard in a collective way, which is protected, we know. And it's something that we've been fighting for many years. And I think people see it as a fundamental attack on working people that they're not going to stand for anymore. Why is it? Because they know working people are under attack every day of their lives in this
country.
And
it's about rebuilding the middle class and,
we gotta
and giving people
it.
Opportunity so that their children have opportunity. That's
yeah.
what it's about.
It's about rebuilding a middle class in this country that has been under extraordinary pressure now for three decades. And this is part of it. This is part of it. There's many aspects of it, but this is part of it. And the solidarity that's been shown here in Ohio, I think is going to be seen as we move forward as well.
All right, Vincent Albrecht. Great. I appreciate the time, President of the New York City Central Labor Council. Vincent, thanks so much, and I'm sure the people of Ohio are thrilled to have you here and thankful that you are.
Well, it's great to be here, and I'm glad we could be of some help.
Thanks so much.
Take care.
Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
To the Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
The following message is brought to you by SEIU Local 668.
My name is Lewis. I help senior citizens get the services they need. I work for you, the taxpayers, in the Area Agency on Aging. Our senior population is growing. Their incomes are shrinking. Their need for government services is increasing, all at the same time. Funding for these services is not keeping pace, which means long waiting lists, huge caseloads, and more seniors at risk. We all know that these are tough economic times, but who wants to see our senior citizens suffer? They did their part. They worked hard and paid their taxes. Now it's our turn to make sure they get the services they need. Please contact your state legislators today and demand that they respect our senior citizens and vote to increase funding for programs that protect them.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So you look at some of the latest World Bank numbers. They've put out a release with the World Development Report on gender equality and development. And no surprise, the report says that women make up 40% of the labor force globally, yet they control less than 1% of the wealth in this world. And you look here at home, the fact of the matter is you've got 1% of the population who controls more than 70% of all financial assets. You look at the gap between those who have and those who do not, and yet I hear the right still pounding on where the religious party, Michelle Bachmann, out there saying today, well, we need, if you want to eat, you got to work. Again, I wish there were folks who could take that high ground away from them, and that's why I've asked the Reverend Tim Ahrens, co-founder of We Believe Ohio, to come talk to us about this SB5 fight and some other things. Reverend Ahrens, I appreciate the time.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
You know, I look at this argument that the people like Michelle Bachmann make, that, well, you know, if you want to work, you want to eat, you got to work, and this whole argument that, you know, to the wealth class, we should give to them everything because somehow they earned it. And those people that need social programs, that need a little help, well, they just need to be pull themselves up by their bootstraps.
Right. Well, somewhere along the line, people lost track of Jesus when they say things like that. They lost track of the fact that over 2,000 passages of Scripture speak to the issues of poverty and equality and the fact that we have a huge gap. We had it then, we have it now. And, you know, I think to myself, one of our passages coming up just in a couple weeks is Matthew 25, and many of us are calling ourselves Matthew 25 Christians. When did I see you hungry?
Yep.
You know, and there are those, particularly on the religious right, who are turning away from those who are hungry and abandoning those in prison, those who have no care, those who have no health care. And they're saying we're Christian. Well, they're not Christian. You can't make that claim. You just can't make that claim if you're not feeding the hungry and caring for the poor. If that's not part of the agenda of a nation like ours, then we're in deep trouble. And we already are.
Because I think we are.
The shift is on.
So. I mean, you look at the inequality in this country, and you know, there's some, oh, you're just jealous. You're talking about class war. Yeah, class war, yeah. We've been losing that class war for 30 years.
Right,
now
we've got to
fight back at it.
Right, right.
And I
think
Warren Buffett said it best. You know, we're in the middle of a class war.
Right.
My class is winning.
Yeah, well, sometimes the truth is spoken most clearly by those who have the greatest advantage. And Warren Buffett is unusual in speaking the truth. I mean, you know, one of the things that concerns me as I hear people talk about SB5 and Issue 2 is, once again, working class folks, folks who are struggling on the margins of Ohio's society and economy, are voting against their own self-interests. You know, I've said it from the State House steps. I've said it in writing. I've said it everywhere where someone will listen. I'll say it again, and that is that if this breaks, if the unions are broken in Ohio through this effort, it will be like a tsunami against the poor in Ohio, and it will spread across
the country. Sure, absolutely. You know, because you know, I look at collective bargaining as one of those tools, and that's all it really is a tool for leveling the playing field, giving someone like me who grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland a shot at moving into the middle class.
Right.
You know, you're going to work hard, you're going to work, and you're going to do all that, but should it pay?
Sure, yeah, I mean, one of my favorite quotes coming out of this whole struggle is Senator Bill Seitz, known very clearly as a conservative judiciary man and legislator here in Ohio. And Bill said, you know, it's like having the jump ball signal in basketball, but only giving the pointing arrow to one side all the time. I mean, it's inconceivable that you do away with collective bargaining and take away people's rights to stand up and be counted. And, in fact, give back to the businesses, to the districts, to the children, to others, what is fair to give back. So, I mean, that's it's insane to think it goes and that we're better off for it. And I was telling my daughter tonight the big lie. The big lie is this, that this is about the Ohio budget. It's not about the Ohio budget. It's about breaking the backs of union people. It's about breaking the backs of those who are on the margins and pushing them further out the door. And it's not creating jobs. You know, we've got a million people out of work here in Ohio. And, you know, our governor was traveling around the state this week saying he had created 38,000 jobs. Well, there's something called humility in the Christian faith. First of all, he hadn't created them. Secondly, it's very fair to say that that they're not the best paying jobs. And he's about to disperse with hundreds of thousands of other jobs. So it's just crazy.
So as you're cutting family-sustaining jobs, you're bringing in poverty wage jobs. Right. And look, you know, you've got a governor in Texas, and our governor in Pennsylvania wants to emulate Texas,
right,
who has the highest share of minimum wage jobs percentage-wise, number-wise in the entire country.
Right.
And they're saying, whoa, he's a job creator. Is that the kind of society we want?
Yeah, it's definitely not the kind of society that I want or that the people who I serve want or the people who come to the doors of our church every day in need. The mean streets of this city and other places in Ohio are growing. I tell the story that, you know, I saw my mother, who was a union worker, a school teacher in Pennsylvania. I saw her cry twice when I was growing up. Once was the day that my grandfather, her father, died. And we got that news. The other day was a day on the picket line because they had to battle on the picket line in Pennsylvania to get a fair wage. Was the day that one of the parents spat upon her, a parent whose child she was teaching and bringing along in school because she was on a picket line. So it's going to get ugly. I mean, you know, this is not the way to go because people will fight and they will continue to go forward for what's fair and what's equitable. So this isn't the end of it. And so, you know, this is a good thing. We have to defeat Senate Bill 5 through defeating Issue 2 tomorrow in Ohio.
And the fight continues day after day after day because it never ends. It's a never-ending struggle.
Right, right.
You know, I hear people, especially my rightward-leaning friends, who say, well, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. And I go, well, you know, at what time do you want to talk about the redistribution of wealth? And you look at the CBO numbers that just came out. The top 1% from 1979 to 2007 saw their after-tax income grow 275%. The poorest of the poor, the folks at the bottom, 18% over that time.
Well, it's pure insanity in some ways. I mean, I'm laughing, but I'm crying, you know, as I think about this. And, you know, one of the things that's become very evident to me with my African-American friends, my Hispanic friends, the unions that are part of the firefighters, the police, the teachers, the workers, the nurses here in Ohio, have been their only opportunity in some ways to rise,
yep,
and to reach a point of leadership that they deserve. And so, you know, many of them also see this is a very racist policy, and I'm very concerned about the racial indicators as well, that this will push more and more people of color into poverty, and that's just horrible. So,
you know, when I grew up, you know, I grew up a browbeaten, physically beaten Catholic, but the Catholic Church at that time believed in social justice, believed in peace, and believed in, you know, love thy neighbor. And
right.
Religion today seems to be, at least what we see in the media, seems to be a very angry, hooray for me. I mean, we just went through a whole 2 days of talking about should the United States have motto be In God We Trust, yet they did nothing to make life better under that.
Well, we have on the count of winning and losing right now, we've got to put one up in the column of the Vatican because the Pope came out with a wonderful statement about economic equality and addressing this inequality and saying that we need to redistribute the wealth in this world. So the Pope's trying, and one of the things that's wonderful about this Pope is that he actually, you know, comes from a very scholarly, studied approach. So when he says something, it comes out of thoughtfulness. It's not something he just throws off the cuff. So I'm hoping that he follows that up by calling his leaders in the church to accountability on economic justice issues.
Yeah. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Reverend Tim Ahrens, co-founder of We Believe Ohio, talking about the SB 5 fight tomorrow, the big election. I'll talk a little bit about what is We Believe Ohio. What's behind that?
Well, We Believe Ohio was formed in the late fall of 2005 and really kicked off in the spring of 2006, facing the fact that the religious right was growing on the states of this on the statehouse steps here in Columbus. The right wing, under the leadership of Rod Parsley, gathered about 1,000 strong, mostly from his church and his school, to say that they were going to take Ohio back for Jesus Christ, and that they were Christocrats. They weren't Republicans or Democrats, and that they were organizing patriot pastors, and that they would register 1 million people for Jesus. And that got the attention of a number of us. So we decided that, you know what, that doesn't really represent the Ohio we're a part of. It also doesn't speak to the great heritage of this state and its democracy. So we organized, We Believe Ohio, across religious lines, Roman Catholic, Protestant, Muslim, Jewish, all kinds of Jewish leaders as well. So we came together to say no to this religious division and yes to a unity in the public square. What I found at the time was, you know, all these years later, looking back, is it was sort of like a bully on the playground. They didn't know what to do when the forces gathered together and said, no, this isn't going to happen in our state. This is not how we represent God, and it is not who we are as people of faith. It really threw the right wing at that time into a real tizzy. You know what? They always bounce back, and faith can drive people to all sorts of conviction. And so they were gone for a while, but they'll be back. And they feel very strongly, especially as they get more money,
right,
that they can win this battle for Jesus in the ballot, as they like to say.
What I always find interesting is you see these folks who they're out there telling you how wonderful they are. And just a story the other day caught my eye. I don't know if you saw it, the Reverend Robert Schuller asking people to donate food to his wife who was ailing, and that is a very Christian thing,
right,
to do.
Right.
And, you know, my wife helps to do the same thing through our church and
right,
things
right.
that you would expect, yet he had it picked up in his limousine.
Well, that's it is sort of a contradiction, I guess you might say. One of the things that we have found and we believe and we have come out against ballot issue 2, we were on the statehouse steps from the earliest hours of this initiative. And one of the things we've called for in the aftermath of this election, as issue 2 is defeated, that we gather together people in a way that can look at the issues in front of us and find a better way forward. Because this is not the way to do politics in Ohio or anywhere. And we've called to Republican leaders and Democratic leaders to be a part of that. And I would hope, as has been a part of the history here in Ohio, that with religious leadership at the table, we can also help broker some meaningful, ethical, moral rational conversation. So that's what we're hoping for. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm excited about the prospects tomorrow. I would like to see a very large victory to kind of put this down, because at the end of the day, this isn't the way we should be going as a country,
right,
taking people's rights away. They talk about savings. Well, we're going
right.
to save the taxpayers' money. What you're really doing is you're stealing from the workers, though.
Right.
And I don't know how you can justify that, right. with rational thought or their faith that they love to proclaim so much.
Well, you know, as I was out on the statehouse steps speaking, preaching, praying, invoking anything I could through the spring and into the summer, one of the things that came to me, a young man whose wedding I did this summer, came to me and he said, you know, I'm a worker. I'm just a worker in this whole plan. I'm never going to be a big leader. I'm never going to be somebody who they're going to turn to in the union. He said, I'm just a guy who goes to work. And he said, I'm the first one to go down when this goes through. It's men and women like that that are just solid Christian people, just good people of faith, just people. I mean, besides all the other pieces
the
we put, the labeling doesn't matter. They're just good human beings. And, you know, I said to him then, and I've said it to him now, shout out to him tonight, we will stand with you through this all, and this will not be passed. So we've got to keep to our word and make it happen.
All right, Reverend Jim Ahrens, I appreciate the time. Co-founder of We Believe Ohio. Going to take a quick break right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. On Friday, Republican presidential candidate and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney held a fiscal policy speech at the Americans for Prosperity Conference. The Center for American Progress Action Fund analyzed the candidate's plan and said it doesn't do everything Romney thinks it will. Senior economist Heather Boucher said the plan will do little to create jobs because it doesn't address aggregate demand.
Our economy is producing 9.2% less today than it would have if we had remained on the path of growth we had prior to the economic crisis. It is that gap that we need to fill to get back to the unemployment levels that we had before the crisis.
Vice President for Economic Policy Michael Ettlinger said Romney's plan will add to the deficit because of the number of tax cuts included in the plan.
Between the extension of all of the Bush tax cuts, which flow primarily to people at the top of the income ladder, his plan to cut corporate taxes, and his plan to eliminate estate taxes, you put all of that together, and that's about a $6.6 trillion tax cut over the next 10 years. Added to additional interest payments on the debt that would be required to pay for those, comes to about $7.8 trillion over the next 10 years.
According to Ettlinger, the plan goes farther than the plan introduced by Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan last year.
The Ryan plan did not specifically go after Social Security, but the Romney plan does, and the Romney plan actually has larger Medicaid cuts than the Ryan plan does. So in broad strokes, it's very similar, but in some ways it's actually quite worse.
Gerald McEntee is a name that's become synonymous with the union he's led for 30 years, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. The president of the 1.6 million member AFSCME sent out a letter on Thursday revealing his plans to step down. In it, he referenced the fights in Wisconsin and Ohio to push back against legislation that guts the rights of workers to collectively bargain. There are already two candidates stepping up to compete for McEntee's seat, both from New York. New York Civil Service Employees Association President Danny Donahue has announced his intention to run, as well as AFSCME's Secretary Treasurer Lee Saunders.
This is what democracy looks like. Give up. What's injustice?
You can find it.
Workers' rights under attack. What do we do?
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Prove out the good old union has come in here to thrill.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So we are here in Columbus, Ohio, at the Ohio AFL-CIO headquarters, as tomorrow being the big day, the vote to repeal SB 5, to give collective bargaining rights, well, to keep them for state workers. I've got Stuart Acuff sitting in front of me. Good friend, Stuart. Thanks for taking time for me.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for all you do. I'm always happy to be on your show anytime, and thanks for being here.
Yeah, we're having
in
a great time.
In the belly of the beast.
Where else on this planet would we want to be today than right here?
That's exactly right, both of us.
So as you're out there knocking on doors, you're out talking to people, what's the sense, what's the feeling, what are we looking for tomorrow?
It's great. I mean, I think every union worker in Ohio, at least everyone I've talked to in the last 4 days, understands that this issue will take collective bargaining away from public employees and weaken our public safety and lower the standard of living for our cops and our firefighters and our teachers and our social workers and hospital workers. They also understand it would take away project labor agreements from construction workers and lower the standard of living and quality of life of construction workers and just accelerate the downward slide of wages in the United States. So union members in Ohio are informed. They know how they're going to vote. They're going to vote no to defeat Senate Bill 2 on Issue 2. And they know what it's about, and they're ready to go.
You know, as you look at this and the people that you've talked to, how many people would you say you'd spoken to that supported Kasich? Because I know in Pennsylvania, where we're from, there are a lot of Republicans who voted for, a lot of union members voted for Tom Corbett, voted for Pat Toomey, kind of buyer's remorse. So I'm curious, you know, as you're out there knocking on doors and talking to people, how many of those union members who thought they were Republican?
Ain't none of them admitting it now. None of them are admitting it now. I talked to a police officer 2 days ago. The days all kind of run together, you know, when you get to this point in the campaign. 2 days ago on the extreme eastern edge of Ohio, right on the Ohio River, and a police officer turned his car into where we were leafleting workers coming out of one of the utility workers' major power plants. And he was lit up like a firecracker. I mean, he was so angry at Kasich. He was so clear about his views. And that's what we're finding everywhere we go. You knock on a door, don't worry about this household. The person who answers the door will say, don't worry about this household. We've already voted. We did early voting. Don't worry about me. I already cast an absentee ballot. Don't worry about me. I know what I'm going to vote on Tuesday. We're getting a great response. I'll tell you, the labor movement here in Ohio and the release staff from the AFL-CIO and the affiliate unions have done an incredible job, a tremendous job, and the national affiliates have done an incredible job of education.
This is the battleground. And you know what I was going to ask you is, you know, you look at what happened in Wisconsin, you know, fantastic opportunity to reach out and talk to members. You look at here in Ohio, where Ohio's been one of those swing states, kind of not sure what its identity is. You know, when I lived in Cleveland for the majority of my life, it was a solidly working class, blue collar kind of an area. And I think this is an opportunity for labor, for working people to find that identity and that voice and that education that has to happen.
Exactly right, Rick. And I don't think people in Ohio are going to forget the double cross that John Kasich pulled, just like the double cross Scott Walker pulled in Wisconsin. They didn't campaign on this. They didn't say we're going to create pain for working families. They didn't say we're going to try to throw working people out of the middle class. They didn't say we're going to try to push construction workers into poverty. You know, we're going to lower taxes, blah, blah, blah. But how are you going to do that? Well, we're going to break the unions. We're going to end collective bargaining. We're going to end project labor agreements. And the truth of the matter is, as you know, and I don't know if your listeners know, some of them know, this is a national fight. Absolutely. This is about taking two or three swing states that we have to elect pro-worker presidents and a pro-working family Congress and taking them out of the picture. You shave 10%, 20%, 30% of union members off in Pennsylvania. Now they're trying to do that with right to work. Here, by doing away with public employee collective bargaining, in Wisconsin, with right to work, in Michigan with right to work, and in Wisconsin with doing away with public employee bargaining. And I'm 56 years old. I lose count. But I'm closer to 60 than I am to 50. And if that happens, I'll never see a pro-worker president again in my lifetime. And I'll never see a pro-worker Congress again in my lifetime. People are beginning to get this.
This is a struggle for the soul of America, and it's a struggle for where the bounties of America go to. And right now, they're going, as the folks at Occupy Wall Street are saying, they're going to the top 1%, the financial elite. Can I get a shameless plug in here?
Please, by all the means.
Because you've allowed me to do that a couple of times. An economist named Richard Levins and I wrote a book last year called Getting America Back to Work. And the book is all about what's happening to the economy and why we have to find a way to help people build their wages so there's more consumer demand and so we can lift the economy from the bottom. And that's what has to happen. You can't lift it from the top. If you try lifting it from the top, you just shear off the top.
Which is what they want.
What they want.
I mean,
that's
if you look
exactly
at the numbers that just came out with the from the Economic Policy Institute, the top 1% from 1979 to 2007, their income went up 275%. You and me, people who struggle and bust our behinds and make a living, 18%.
Right. Essentially, we stayed even for 20 years
and
with the cost of living. But in the last 10 years, while Bush was president, we lost. We declined. We lost numbers of jobs, and we lost our real wages declined.
And they talk about this grand meritocracy. You know, you need to, the harder you work, the more you're going to, and you look at productivity is going through the roof.
Roof, right.
But wages have flatlined.
Right. Or declined. Flatlined or declined. This is not about meritocracy. Most of those folks in the top 1% got their money from daddy. They didn't make it. There's a few who did. Bill Gates who did, and Bill Gates
got a lot of government money.
He got a lot of government money, but he did it with innovation and entrepreneurship. I got no issue with innovation. If you have the brain and you can make that happen, that is fine. But if you got your money from daddy and you're using that to suppress other people and you're using that to hold other people down.
We're not talking about the Koch brothers, are we?
We would be talking about the Koch brothers, as a matter of fact.
You know, the thing is what's interesting is most people had never heard of the Koch brothers until maybe the last year. But they have been funding right-wing groups for the last 40 years.
Yes.
I mean, there's nothing new
there.
Ain't
quiet.
It's just now people are starting to, and they feel a little more emboldened to want to take a little credit for things.
Yes, they do.
I mean, you look at these euphemistically named groups that they fund, Freedom Works.
Right.
Americans for Prosperity and Americans who love puppies and apple pie and all of these groups who, you know, nothing good comes out of them.
And you know this, but your listeners may not know this, that Freedom Works was the organizer as an institution of the Tea Party movement. The Tea Party movement didn't spring up organically from...
You mean it wasn't spontaneous organization?
It was not spontaneous, not grassroots anger. It was built... by Freedom Works.
You mean those $200,000 buses didn't just pop out of the ground?
No, they didn't just pop out of the ground. Dick Armey raised the money. Dick Armey, former congressman from Dallas or Fort Worth. I can't remember which city, but Texas. And right-wing economics professor. He founded Freedom Works. And as far as I can tell, he had the idea to use Freedom Works to fund and build the Tea Party movement. And they've been, it's amazing, they've been incredibly successful with smoke and mirrors. They get 100 people over here and Fox News will make it look like 1,000. They get 50 people over here and Fox News will make it look like 500.
But who owns Fox News?
Right.
I mean, who owns our media? I mean, the bigger problem in all of this is the education system. And, you know, to pull this back to Ohio, where we are here in Columbus, Ohio, I'm here with Stuart Acuff, where we are here is you're looking at an opportunity for labor to bypass fake news on Fox and to be able to talk to people as you're doing face-to-face and do that hard work that has to be done. And if I'm the Republicans in 2012, I got to worry about Ohio being that swing state, which you look at in Pennsylvania. I know they don't think they can win the state, so they're going to try and steal it with their little rig game of splitting up the congressional districts
and
voting.
Right, right, right. Well, they have more ways to get around democracy. And I'm going to say that again. They have more ways to get around and subvert democracy.
And none of them are new.
None of them are new. They have more ways to defeat the people's will. You know what they did here? This is what they did here. 2 weeks ago, they announced early voting. In the middle of early voting, they canceled it. They canceled it. We had to change a million leaflets because we were telling people to go vote early.
But isn't that, on a certain level, isn't that fraudulent?
Yes, I mean, it is.
They're going around the country saying, well, you know, there might be some grandmother who doesn't have a photo ID.
Right.
She may choose. What you're telling me, that's cheating.
That is cheating.
That's fraud.
That is fraud. Well, they stole the election in 2004 in Florida. They stole the election in
2000 in Florida. 2000 here in Florida.
And in 2004 here in Ohio by disenfranchising particularly African-American voters. They closed polling sites. That's the other thing they've done this year. They moved polling sites without telling people, closed polling sites. It's just unconscionable.
So as you're out there, and people have got to wake up to this, I mean, the reality is Ohio is right now the center of all this. Where do we go? I mean, once this happens, and tomorrow, I do believe it's going to be an overwhelming victory, that you're going to see this bad piece of legislation pushed back and repealed, then where do you go? I mean, because now that you've got people excited and interested,
right,
activated and engaged, where do you go?
Well, I think we broaden our relationships. I mean, the Occupy America movement has essentially the same message we do. You know, they could, some people complain because they don't have a clear demand. That doesn't bother me. But that's part of where we go, to the Occupy America movement, to the young people who know that 99% of us are getting screwed, to the young people who are willing to do something about it, to the young people who are saying, we're not taking it anymore. And we go to them, being the labor movement. We sharpen our political game. We sharpen our education game. We continue to struggle to organize people because I think the contradictions we're faced with are best seen during organizing campaigns. When the boss says, I'm your friend, trust me, and then
jabs you in the
slams
back.
A hammer. Yeah, slams a hammer, fires 5 or 10 people. But the truth of the matter is the labor movement has to stay on its toes, has to stay active, and has to fight. We have to fight.
Absolutely.
This is not, our labor movement is definitely threatened. If they shave 10-20% of our members off by right to work in Pennsylvania, by right to work in Michigan, by what Scott Walker did in Wisconsin, by SB5 here in Ohio, that's all it takes for us to not have a chance to elect a pro-worker president or a pro-worker Congress.
Let me ask you.
So we've got to stay on this.
On a personal level, not speaker, a spokesman of your union, but on a personal level, don't you have to look at now this being a good time for this to have happened? Because, you know, labor still has some strength. I mean, it has been dwindling for the last several years. But now that you still have some strength, the attack better come now than a couple of years down the road. So that people then do see, hey, there's something going on.
I think that's right. I
mean, if the fight has to come now
rather than
later.
Right. I think that's right. Although it's hard for me to find very many good things in this fight, but I think that's right.
I would think having the opportunity to educate members who have never really been reached out to.
Well, that's true. But the other thing is, and here's the big message. You know, Rick, when they close a refrigerator plant in Evansville, Indiana, in the middle of the worst recession since the Great Depression, that's economic treason.
I agree.
When they close a Goodyear plant in Union City, Tennessee, where people drive 200 miles a day to work, 2,000 jobs.
It's economic terrorism.
It's economic terrorism, economic treason. And the truth of the matter is, I don't think you can sustain a political democracy without a strong workers' movement. And in America, a strong workers' movement means the labor movement, and means unions.
And hopefully that's what we find tomorrow. I'm hoping for a big victory. Prediction? Do you do predictions?
No, not really. Okay. But I won't because I'm a Southerner and I'm too superstitious.
There you go, Stuart Acuff. I appreciate the time.
Hey, always, Rick, listen. I appreciate what you all do. You and Brett do all the time. It means so much to our country and our nation and to our labor movement. And I'm your biggest fan. You don't have a bigger fan than me.
Thanks so much, Stuart. You too. We're here at the Ohio headquarters of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
One way you can tell that a bank is in trouble is that it suddenly starts buying full-page ads in newspapers to tell us what great shape it's in and what a fine job it's doing for our communities. Such a PR push is now being made by Bank of America, which, despite its happy face ads, is in a heap of hurt. How big of a heap? So big that it's trying to share the hurt with you and me. In the recent Wall Street collapse, B of A took advantage of the crisis to bulk up its empire. Using $45 billion in bailout money from us taxpayers, the giant gobbled up two troubled financial powers, investment house Merrill Lynch and mortgage hustler Countrywide Financial. It's now choking on those mergers, as well as its own executive incompetence. Its credit rating has been downgraded, its stock price has plummeted, its CEO is desperately trying to raise cash and save his job by firing 36,000 employees, and it has infuriated its own customers by trying to impose a $5 monthly fee on debit card users. Now, though, CEO Brian Moynihan has a dandy plan to lighten his load by dumping a big chunk of it on us taxpayers. He's trying to transfer a mess of bad investments now held by the Merrill Lynch subsidiary into B of A's consumer banking unit. Why? Because that unit has about $1 trillion in customer deposits that are insured by Uncle Sam. So if Merrill's sorry investments cause the banking unit to fail, the feds would be there to rescue it. A banking expert has commented that there is always an enormous temptation to dump the losers on the insured institutions. We should have fairly tight restrictions on that. This is Jim Hightower saying, fairly tight? We should have totally tight restrictions, as in, no, you cannot do that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can, and we will, rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. Well, the problem is you wanted to make a living. You wanted to pay your bills. You wanted to support your family. You wanted to put food on the table. Oh, gee, you wanted a retirement. Oh, heaven forbid, you want to be able to go see a doctor when you're sick. Oh, how dare you? How dare you? I'm sitting here with Joaquin Carrera. He is a public worker in Los Angeles, out here in Columbus, Ohio, knocking on doors, making phone calls, talking to people in response to Kasich's SB5. Hopefully put an end to the big steaming pile known as issue number 2. Joaquin, thanks for taking time for me.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Why Columbus, Ohio, all the way from Los Angeles? It's kind of cold out here, isn't it?
It is cold, but, this is where the action is taking place, and we want to make sure that the Ohio community and the residents here in Columbus go out to the polls. We don't want that what is going on here in Ohio that goes to California.
I hear that from a number of people. If we can stop it here, maybe you keep it from spreading, kind of like a cancer.
That's pretty much. And I don't think we need that in California. You guys, I believe Ohio and the Madison, where I went before, these are the places that, in particular, my union was first initiated. And I believe that, you know, I don't know what happened to start. Why is it that, you know, that a lot of the communities are attacking public employees? You know?
Well, what it is, you know, they have health insurance and they have pensions and they make a reasonable wage. And, you know, we've got to take that away from them. Because we in the private sector, we've been getting that stolen from us for years. So now it's your turn.
Oh, I don't think so, you know. I don't think it's fair because...
it's not fair.
No, I mean, and, well, I don't think that's a good answer. We need to pretty much say it differently. We want for them to have the same thing, you know. If they don't have health insurance, they should have it. Why not, you know? It's a right that they need to have, you know. It's the American dream. And that's why I believe... it's unfortunately that this economic recession, whatever is going on, has brought the worst of some people. And I think that's, it comes to greed.
Absolutely. So, you hit on an interesting point because, you know, I've asked the question 1,000 times on this program. Why is it that people will look to you or anyone else and say, you've got health insurance, you've got a pension, you can support your family and feed your family. I'm struggling in those areas and you shouldn't have it. Instead of asking the question, well, how can I make sure that I have those things, and what path should I take to do that, they want to take it from you instead of making themselves better.
That's why I'm here. I'm trying to change the attitude and the perspective that the private workers have and public employees. I believe that as a public employees, we have a responsibility to be good workers and in a way be the eyes of the community. When we are out there, we represent the community, and we need to set a good example and tell them that, you know, what we do is important, and that's why we have these benefits.
This is serve the public, absolutely.
And that's
so as you're out knocking on folks' doors, as you're talking to people in the streets, what kind of response are you getting from people?
Well, here is different from L.A. Here,
you think?
you have to kind of be looking at the window to make sure they're there. Some folks... I mean, they're not so used to people coming and knocking on the doors, especially someone from Los Angeles. But, you know, I met very good, interesting people. I met someone that he was 85 years old. He was in his tractor doing his yard, and I stopped to talk to him. And, you know, we had a good conversation, and he told me he comes from the old times when he had a horse and a mule, and now he made it because
he has a tractor now.
He has a tractor now, Sam. But he, you know, at the end, after a good conversation, he was saying that he was listening to some of the radio ads, and he was kind of, you know, wondering, you know, I was listening to the governor, and he was telling us to vote yes in it, and I told him, do you feel that a man should have the right to have a voice at work? Should employees have the right to have collective bargaining? And he says, yes, I believe so. So, you know, I feel proud that, you know, you go to talk to different folks here in Ohio, and they may have their perspectives you know, what they feel about unions or public employees, but they also feel that you have that right, and they're willing to I believe they're going to stand with us, you know.
Yep.
That's what
the ability to kind of give them a different perspective, something else to consider.
Yes.
You know, I look at this group, Building a Better Ohio, and I got to be honest, the right wing does a masterful job of making up these euphemistic names like Building a Better Ohio, you know, or Freedom Works, or Americans for Prosperity, or some of these other groups. But Building a Better Ohio, this right wing front group, they came out with a quote that government employees make 43% more in wages and benefits than folks in the private sector. And I'm curious, 43%. Does that sound even in the ballpark?
That's not me. I was a government employee for 9 years. I used to work as a temporary employee. I was laid off for 2 weeks during the Christmas. I wouldn't know if I was gonna come back to have a job. And that was one of the reasons I started to organize, and it was through a union that I was able to have a job where I could have a pension and I could have a medical insurance and a sense of stability in my life, you know, and that's what having a union gives you. Sometimes it is, and like I've been hearing, you know, if there's no public employees with a union, are in a way the balance between government or creating a, I don't want to go to that string. You know, I don't like saying that, but, you know, having a dictatorship, you know.
Yeah, we don't want to do that.
No, we don't want to.
We definitely do not want to live in the fascist state,
yeah.
Run by for-profit private interests. And that's a whole show maybe down the line at some point that we really, you know, kind of steer away from that. Yeah. Let's get back to why, you know, you're here, all of your brothers and sisters in this room and all the people who've been out knocking on doors. You know, I got to imagine that there's some kind of camaraderie, some kind of solidarity, and you're seeing people come together, maybe not just here, but across the state and across the country.
Well, I have met people from Wisconsin that they were here, and
I knew you looked familiar. We were in Wisconsin, along with 150,000 other people, but we were there as well.
Well, I know it was. That's another story to tell. You know, I don't believe that I was there. You know, walking into that Capitol building and seeing the true democracy.
Yep.
It was inspiring, especially since I'm not originally from here, meaning the United States. I'm an immigrant.
Where are you from?
I'm from Mexico, the state of Jalisco. And going there, and you know, I was kind of wondering, look, this is what democracy looks like. That was the saying that people were telling. And I'm so proud that, you know, you have the opportunity to be able to do this kind of things.
Yep.
And I was thinking, you know, I mean, you don't have words to explain it, but I was kind of going into how this guy Joaquin, that was born in a little small town where there was no light and no running water at one point, and I'm right here, you know, fighting for some of the rights that employees need to have. How is it that you get to get into this mindset, these values that you want to keep? And that's why I was wondering why the people in Madison, even here in Ohio, why are they not fighting to keep him, you know? Why are they don't know what they're
that's
missing.
That's the question, yeah. I mean, maybe it is because you have seen what's worse. And you go, hey, I'd like to maintain that.
Yes, that's how I feel, you know. That's why I'm out here, you know, telling, you know, you don't know what you if you keep on going this direction, you don't know what you're going to end up with, you know. You don't want it.
Well, I mean, the power elites, that's where they want to take us to a two-class system where you have very, very wealthy people and you have everybody else. And everybody else fighting and scrambling and slitting each other's throats for pennies.
Well, I'm glad that I came to Ohio and you got the opportunity to... In a way, you know, I told somebody else, I want to thank the governor for putting this propositions because he's waking up
American
public. You know,
between him and Scott Walker in Wisconsin, they have definitely awakened the labor movement.
Yeah.
Well, Joaquin, I appreciate the time. It was great talking with you. And keep up the fight, keep up the battle, and let's hope for the best for tomorrow.
Ohio, remember... Issue 2, vote no.
There you go. Thank you so much, Joaquin Carrera. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280, or visit our website at teamsterslocal776.org. We are people helping people.
My name is Toya. I'm a sales rep, and I work for Capital Blue Cross.
If you're choosing Medicare coverage, Toya will meet you anywhere to help you decide.
I met him at food courts, diners, the parks, on a bench. And today, we're meeting at airport.
Mike was a Navy service person, an engineer, and a pilot.
I'm a senior blue PPO member.
He is technically retired.
I'm a gray-haired teenager.
Mike appreciates the visit.
It's more personal, and you can talk easier. You can show emotion, which you can't over the telephone. And it's more caring.
Toya would agree.
I love my customers. I really, really do. My main objective is to show them that I care. When you care more, you do more.
For customer service, call 1-888-340-3978, Monday through Friday, 8 to 8, with extended hours October 15th through February 14th. Senior Blue PPO is issued by Capital Advantage Insurance Company, Medicare Advantage Organization with a Medicare contract. Capital Blue Cross and Capital Advantage Insurance Company are independent licensees of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. We are here in Columbus, Ohio. Tomorrow, the big vote. Do they repeal SB5? Do they kick that back? And then where does that lead from then on? I hope this puts it down once and for all, but we shall see. I don't know if you saw this. Congress, again, looking at extending unemployment benefits. This is why we need to be contacting our representatives early, often. What's amazing to me is you've got these legislators across the country, this guy in Tennessee being one of them, actually the lieutenant governor there, a guy named Ron Ramsey, came out and said that, it's a lifestyle. Unemployment, it's become a lifestyle. We need people who are going to go out and they're going to have to work harder. They're going to have to go look for jobs harder. What I think Lieutenant Governor Ramsey doesn't get is that there's a ton of research out there that shows that folks who qualified for unemployment benefits, they're only unemployed about one and a half weeks longer than those folks who didn't. And if you were to pull that unemployment out of the economy, you're talking about losing some $57 billion. And again, no one's given me any rational, lucid explanation on how you grow an economy by stealing money out of it and taking it from families to feed their kids and keep the lights on while handing it over to the billionaires. But here in Columbus, tomorrow, the big vote again. I've got Marian Harris sitting here with me, a former Franklin County House representative. Marian, I appreciate you taking time for me. When you look at this bill as a former legislator, this has got to just tear your heart out.
It very much does, and I think it just it symbolizes the process that's happening in our legislature right now with a Republican House, a Republican Senate, Republican governor. These things happen behind closed doors. Democrats, unions, labor, working people had no input, very little input into the construction of this bill. They were locked out of the State House for a period of time when they came in to demonstrate. It was just an awful, awful, awful process. I was down at the State House, and just thousands of people were there, and, no one was listening, at least the Republicans, I should say. Republicans were not listening.
In 2010, you had this big wave across the country, where we're from in Pennsylvania, the same kind of thing. You saw Republicans taking over the legislature, taking over the governor's mansion, promising this change, promising to create jobs, doing the jobs thing. I haven't seen it yet. Again, still no jobs bills out of the folks on the Republican side in Pennsylvania. But, the promise was we were going to create jobs. We're going to change things. And there's been a lot of change. I'm just not so sure any of it's good.
It hasn't been creating jobs. I think that the polls have showed that if Governor Strickland, who was the governor when I was in the House, ran against Governor Kasich now, he'd win in a landslide. There's no question about it. Governor Strickland took a number of measures to deal with a recession that was not of our making.
Right.
We didn't make it. Governor Kasich and his colleagues on Wall Street were the reason that we were in a recession. Governor Strickland managed to keep everybody employed on the state level. He did what he could. I mean, it broke my heart when we had to cut funding to some of the issues that I really care about, which are mental health and schools and things like that. But he did the best he could under the circumstances. And in retrospect, I think people are now realizing that.
So you look back to 2010, the change that they wanted. This isn't what they were expecting.
No.
And this SB 5 thing, did Kasich run on this? I mean, did the Republicans who took power, did they run on, we're going to steal collective bargaining rights?
No. They never really talked about that. They never talked about it. I remember the woman I ran against who was trying very hard to get labor support said that she supported collective bargaining. But when she was elected, she voted in favor of Senate Bill 5. It wasn't a major issue in the campaign. That was not the major issue. Jobs was the issue. Jobs, 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 jobs.
And any bills? Did they have some bills running around?
No.
Another one.
Yeah, they introduced 7 bills dealing with abortion, anti-abortion bills.
Well, that creates jobs.
Yeah, of course, for backstreet abortionists.
Absolutely.
You know, the focus has not been on creating jobs. They've given tax breaks to companies to move from one side of Ohio to the other, or from one community in Franklin County to another. Tax breaks to keep people. The whole tax break situation just drives me nuts.
Where I grew up, there was American Greetings was the big card company in Brooklyn, Ohio for years. They went to the state. The state gave them, I think it was $105 million. And then they went to the local communities and shook them down.
Exactly.
I mean, this whole business-friendly thing
is crazy.
Has gotten out of hand.
It's absolutely out of hand. I mean, right here in Franklin County, you have a company literally threatening to move 20 miles because they can get more tax breaks from the community that's 20 miles away from where they are now. It's ludicrous.
And to me, that's a failure of leadership. And beyond it, it's their ideology that we should be pandering to business, whatever they want.
Right.
And while we're in this recession, I got to be honest, business has got us by the short hairs.
That's right. And, when you look at the budget that the Republicans and Governor Kasich put forth, it's $5 billion bigger than the budget we had under Governor Strickland. And yet they're claiming there was an $8 billion deficit. We still haven't quite figured out the numbers there.
Arthur Anderson accounting.
Yeah, Arthur Anderson accounting, exactly. They cut local government funding by 50%. They cut schools by $1.3 billion. Now they're going to make up that money on the backs of firefighters and police and teachers. It's ridiculous.
You can call
it's
it what it is.
Ridiculous.
You know, they keep saying we're going to save all this money. It's theft. It is wage theft,
exactly,
pure and simple.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the SB 5 as it went through the process. As someone who's been in the Ohio legislature, anything weird about this whole process going through? I mean, any
thief
in the night kind of stuff?
Behind the closed doors. But, I have to say that if we don't do something about the way we govern in this country, both at the congressional level, at the state level, if we don't become more willing to talk across the aisle and deal with each other in a civil way, we're not going to get anything better. I mean, the Republicans did this all behind closed doors. But I tell you the truth, when we were in control of the House, we did things behind closed doors. I co-sponsored with a Republican a bill on domestic violence. And, we got partway through, but there's too much partisanship, much too much partisanship.
How much of that do you think is that, I have my views? For instance, I'm a union person, been a union person my whole life. I don't know that I'm willing to give on collective bargaining. As where a Republican hates collective bargaining, where's the common ground?
I don't think that's a question of love and hate. I think it's alike in the middle there. I think there are parts of Senate Bill 5 that, had they been negotiated beforehand, could have been dealt with. I mean, this bill, the collective bargaining laws, was introduced and passed in 1983. Times have changed.
Right.
There's no reason why rational people can't sit down and say, okay, it's not at 1983 anymore. Let's see, where can we make some changes? Where can we modify? That never happened. As far as I know, that never happened. My colleagues were frustrated. My former colleagues, I stayed in touch with most of them, frustrated and upset and felt they had absolutely no input whatsoever into the process.
I hear the same story in Wisconsin when we were there back in February. I hear the same story from the folks in Pennsylvania who, when you have one party complete control and one party rule, this is what happens.
That's exactly right.
And that's why I think the electorate, the voters, have to make this decision. This isn't something that the politicians are going to do. This is something that you and I and everybody else who votes. And hopefully tomorrow what will happen is the folks here in Ohio will come out and vote this issue number 2 the right way on issue 2.
What we need more than the right way, we need it to be big. Because one of our fears is that they're going to come back next year and piecemeal introduce legislation that piecemeal parts of Senate Bill 5. But if we have a big victory, if we win by a huge margin, these are politicians.
Right.
They're going to have to go home.
They've
to their...
They've got their finger in the wind.
Yep. Sure. And they're going to have to run in 2012. And if the people speak really loudly, they're going to think twice before they're going to introduce little bits of legislation that will reintroduce Senate Bill 5.
That's a good point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Marian Harris, former Franklin County House Rep here in the state of Ohio. We're talking about SB 5 and the big vote tomorrow, which, again, I'm hoping, as you pointed out, goes down in major flames. But one of the things I wanted to look to the forward, to the future as, you know, you look at this vote tomorrow, maybe it's the big win we're hoping for. What are the voters in 2012, people you've talked to, what do you think the sentiment's going to be as we move forward in this?
The people I talk to, of course, mostly are political, so, you know, we're all kind of very knowledgeable. But I talk to some folks, like my son, who's not political. They're just kind of fed up. They're just kind of turned off. They think politicians are in it for themselves. We've got to change the image of politicians because I'm a decent person. All my political friends are decent people who care about people, and that's why they're there. They're not there to get rich. They're not there to necessarily become, president. They're there because they care about good government and helping people. And we have to get that message back out there again. We've got to have John Q.
Well, that's going to be difficult.
I know. We've got to get John Q. Public to realize that government isn't bad, that we are there.
The problem is you've got people who absolutely don't believe in government. I've met a number of the folks who they absolutely despise everything that government stands for. So, and I always ask voters, why would you vote for somebody to run something that they despise? And then it fails, and they go, see, it fails. You put somebody in charge of something that's telling you it's going to fail. There's no incentive there for them to do anything right.
Well, we have got to work together. We've got to stop the partisanship. We've got to get people to understand that. I mean, look at what Congress just did. They vote down a job bill, and they spend 2 hours debating in God We Trust. I mean, you know, where are the priorities? Where is the... It just boggles my mind.
I'm a big believer in we got the God thing out of the way, which I'm okay with, do what you've got to do. But if we have to relive 1956, which is when we put that all into place, let's do the jobs bill that came with that. Because there was the Eisenhower construction period where they built the Eisenhower highway system. Now that we've done the God thing, I'm okay with that. You had to show everybody you're there, and I'm all right with that. Let's do the jobs thing.
I think it's embarrassing. I think it's embarrassing that they stand up there and do what they did and don't deal with the real issues that are facing this country.
Well, Marian Harris, I appreciate the time, and I hope that you will consider running again.
Unfortunately, they gerrymandered me out of a district that I can run in. So
there is a topic.
That's another whole show.
That is another whole talk, because we're going through the same thing in Pennsylvania where they're jerry-rigging the whole state to make sure that the senator in our listening area, he doesn't have to take that Democratic part of it.
Yeah.
They just kind of horseshoed that right out.
Well.
Amazing stuff. Again, Marian, thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
United we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Dear John Bank, I am so sorry it has to be this way, but there's just no choice. I wish circumstances were different, but I can't hide my feelings any longer. I'm in love with another, and you just don't compare. I got tired of you taking advantage of me, charging me higher and higher fees, and raising rates behind my back. I did love you so. But now we have to break up. It's hard, but the right thing for me. I'm with PSECU now, and this credit union treats me right. That's all I ever asked for, to be somewhere I belong.
If you're ready to break up with your bank and take back what's yours, we're ready to help. Call, click, or come in. You can join. Go to PSECU.com/befree and see where you belong.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it, we make it happen.
Standing up to conservatives and corporatists every weeknight. The Rick Smith Show.
So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your life. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Folks are out knocking on doors, talking to voters. One of those volunteers is Bill Hartman, a retired IATSE member from Nevada, who came out here to Ohio to knock on some doors and change some hearts and minds. Bill, thanks for taking time for me.
Glad to be here.
You know, I look at the number of people coming through, the excitement, the, just an amazing time.
It is. It is. This is historic. I'm glad to be part of this. There's so many good people in Columbus that are for this No On To campaign, and I'm proud to be in their front yards talking them up.
It's, so the big it's question, good. Nevada. Why are you here in Ohio from Nevada?
Well, I'm retired, and I retired to someplace that was nice and beautiful and cheap. And
especially now with the housing bubble that burst.
Right. So, but I was motivated to go to L.A., get on a plane, come to Columbus, and do the right thing. No On To is what we're all about, and it's a course in labor history that is you cannot get anywhere else. And what happened in Wisconsin and what's happening in Columbus, the rest of Ohio, I'm proud to be a part of it.
I mean, we are really living, you know, they say, may you live in interesting times. Interesting times.
Yes, yes.
And what I find amazing about this, and really what I find great about this, is that we're a culture, we've kind of turned into a culture where we're kind of isolated from one another. We do things on the internet, we buy things on catalogs, we don't do a lot of talking to people face to face. What I've seen come out of Wisconsin, what I've seen come out of the occupation movement, this, a lot of people going out, knocking on doors, talking to people, a lot of conversations eye to eye, and I think that's fantastic.
The people are rising up. The people are finally taking their place in society and doing something.
So as you're knocking on these folks' doors, what are you finding? I mean, are you finding people who are generally supportive, finding people who may not know the issues? What are you finding?
Most of the people are generally supportive, and they're knowledgeable about the issue. They know the difference between the referendum and the bill that got passed, and they're adamant about repealing this piece of bad legislation. And they're going to go to the polls tomorrow.
Now, that's the hope. The hope is on Tuesday that people get out and exercise their constitutional right to vote. And that's one of the things that's always amazed me, that we have this. And I guess maybe it's because it's been given to us, this right to vote. And the poor numbers of voting participation, especially in off-year elections like this year. But I think issues like this grab people's attention, and I'm hoping that folks come out on Tuesday.
We had the Civil War. It's been a while ago. It was a very important thing, and we have a Constitution that is a masterpiece, and we should observe it. We should all know the rules, and this is a classic example of the good things that come out of that Constitution.
You mentioned Civil War. Do you see, because there's part of me that says we're in the middle of a Civil War right now, the War of Ideas. There are two very distinct ideas, and it takes us back to the Civil War. You know, the same states' rights issues, the same type things we really haven't settled. I mean, you look at this collective bargaining situation here in Ohio. Is this going to be one of the moments where we say we agree collective bargaining is good for us, good for our workers, good for our states, good for our nation?
With the right wingers rising up, collective bargaining is the key tool to stand our ground. 100 years of collective bargaining, and we spoke earlier about it's drifting from our vocabulary. It shouldn't. It should be right. This is the only thing that's going to save us. This is the only economic tool that we can get together behind and really utilize to push back.
So, you know, any really interesting folks that you ran into? Because, you know, when
I've knocked on doors,
when I've made phone calls, there's always someone that sticks out in my mind where I go, boy, that was a rich experience right there.
Well, I have knocking on door stories, shall we?
If you got one real quick.
Okay. Yesterday, there was an open door. A guy was on my list. I poked in there, and the poor gentleman had passed away. So I, being an EMT also, which kind of puts me in a light when it comes to this issue, I looked around to see if there was anybody else. There wasn't, and I backed out of the door, took a step, and three Columbus police officers along with the rest of the neighbors are right there. And that's one of those moments that you can't sort of describe on the air.
Yeah, that's one of those moments.
So 10 minutes later, you know, they let me go. I insisted on rolling the guy to see if he had a absentee ballot. But no, not a good idea. No. And one of the nicer officers said, you know, you can go now.
Yeah, you should go now.
So that's a door knock story. But better than that are the salt of the earth, the golden people that know the issues, that are passionate about doing away with this crummy legislation.
And that's what we need. More folks like you, Bill Hartman. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bill. So got an email from Rick saying, hey, I thought you'd be interested in seeing the big raises by the folks who sit in the CEO boardrooms. And he sent me the guy from Viacom, got a $50.5 million raise, or 150% increase. And if you scroll down, you look at the CEOs on Wall Street. Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase took a 1,500% raise. Goldman Sachs' CEO, Lloyd Blankenfein, almost a 1,600% raise. Talk about filling your pockets. And you wonder why folks here in Ohio are out in the streets talking to neighbors, talking to friends, talking to fellow union members about doing away with SB 5 and fighting back against this attack on workers' rights. I'm sitting here with Luke Hollinsworth. He's a member of the ILWU out in California. Luke, thanks for taking time for me.
Yeah, of course.
Tell me, what brought you here from California?
Well, like you said, I'm a longshoreman from California, but I also sit on what we call the L.A. County Federation of Labor, which we work with all the unions in the L.A. area. And once the word got out that we were going to try to send 100 guys out here, I had to come. I mean, it's the working class, and we're being attacked in several states. In Wisconsin has gotten a lot of notoriety for it, but you got Michigan, Ohio, Florida. It's happening everywhere. And if we don't stop it in those states now, it's just going to bleed through the rest of the country. There's enough right-to-work states as there is.
Yeah, I mean, the idea, and it's very much a labor idea. An injury to one is an injury to all. So an attack on one of your brothers, absolutely.
It's funny you mention that. That's been our motto since 1934. An injury to one is an injury to all. It's on our shirts. It's on the dispatch hall when you go to work every day. And it's something that we try to live by out in Southern California.
So you see what's going on here. And there's an opportunity for workers here in the state of Ohio to push back against some really, really nasty legislation that was rammed through in the middle of the night. When you're out talking with people, knocking on doors and interacting with folks, what kind of messaging are you getting back? What kind of feedback are you getting?
You know, we're getting a lot of really good feedback. People understand that that this is a bad just for the middle class in general. Everyone, or not everyone, I would say 95% of the people I talk to are all, yeah, we know we're going to vote issue 2 down. We're going to get rid of Senate Bill 5. But there's a few people out there that they think just because the budget got balanced last year that it's okay to vote yes on this and get the Senate bill passed, get issue 2 passed and get the Senate bill not recalled or repealed. And to them I say it's the balanced budget. It doesn't need to be balanced on the back of the middle class or the working class.
But we're saving so much money. I love this argument that we're saving money. And I go, well, you know, if you want to take that to the next logical conclusion, if you can steal wages from public workers, we can do that to private sector workers and maybe you.
That's exactly why I'm here. I mean, it starts in the public sector, but I'm a private sector union, and we need to watch out for each other's back. You know, Governor Kasich said he wants to break the back of all unions. That's just ridiculous talk. So we're not going to stay in California where we don't have this public sector problem and just watched Governor Kasich ruin his state workers.
What's interesting is you said that he wanted to break the back of unions, and I think back to, you know, when he was a kid, his father was a postal worker, a union member. He was able to, you know, to go to school and have a decent, solid middle-class life. Why? Because his father had a union job.
Right. I went to a door to a police officer, and he told me his son is a bigwig for IBM, and his son is going to vote yes on two. And it's like, didn't your son get an education based off of your wages? Didn't you raise him and your entire life off of your working class wages and put him through college so he can have that opportunity now? And he's just going to turn his back on you, his family, because he wants to balance the budget? It's ridiculous.
Well, you should balance the budget by not giving away hundreds of millions of dollars to corporations here in the state. And I keep going back to where I grew up. American Greetings was one of the big employers in the area. And the state gave them $105 million here to stay in Ohio. And then they went and they shook down the little city to get money out of them. At what point do we wake up and say, no more, enough of this business-friendly nonsense. Enough with the stealing from public workers to give to big corporations. It's mind-blowing.
Right. And these public workers are the people that we depend on every day. It's our school teachers. It's our nurses. It's our firefighters. It's the people that pick up your trash every week and wash the streets, you know.
How much of this discussion that you're having with folks is an educational process? Because you've named a couple of things. All we hear in the media is, you know, teachers, cops, firemen. Don't think about the bus driver. Don't think about the person collecting your trash. Don't think about the 911 operator. All the other jobs that are done by public sector workers. How much of this, what you're doing, is also education?
Well, you know, when we go to the door, I think that the state of Ohio, or at least the message has already been out, and it's just really I've been reminding people, hey, we need to get rid of this issue. So as much as I want to engage these people and have the conversation, it seems like this state is well aware of what's going on. And, you know, tomorrow it's going to be the first time that this has ever been voted on by the people to get rid of these programs that are meant to break the unions of public sector unions. So Ohio can set a precedence, and they need to just blow the election away so all the other states know, don't tread on the working class. Don't tread on the middle class. It's going to be a good day, I think, tomorrow at the voting booths, but I'm really hoping for like a 20-point win.
As I think most people are. Luke Hollingsworth, I appreciate the time. Member of the ILWU, our good friends out there on the West Coast. Thanks so much, Craig. Luke, I appreciate it.
Yes, of course. Thanks.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. On Friday, Republican presidential candidate and former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney held a fiscal policy speech at the Americans for Prosperity Conference. The Center for American Progress Action Fund analyzed the candidate's plan and said it doesn't do everything Romney thinks it will. Senior economist Heather Boucher said the plan will do little to create jobs because it doesn't address aggregate demand.
Our economy is producing 9.2% less today than it would have if we had remained on the path of growth we had prior to the economic crisis. It is that gap that we need to fill to get back to the unemployment levels that we had before the crisis.
Vice President for Economic Policy Michael Ettlinger said Romney's plan will add to the deficit because of the number of tax cuts included in the plan.
Between the extension of all of the Bush tax cuts, which flow primarily to people at the top of the income ladder, his plan to cut corporate taxes, and his plan to eliminate estate taxes, you put all of that together, and that's about a $6.6 trillion tax cut over the next 10 years. Added to additional interest payments on the debt that would be required to pay for those, comes to about $7.8 trillion over the next 10 years.
According to Ettlinger, the plan goes farther than the plan introduced by Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan last year.
The Ryan plan did not specifically go after Social Security, but the Romney plan does, and the Romney plan actually has larger Medicaid cuts than the Ryan plan does. So, in broad strokes, it's very similar, but it, in some ways it's actually quite worse.
Gerald McEntee is a name that's become synonymous with the union he's led for 30 years, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. The president of the 1.6 million member AFSCME sent out a letter on Thursday revealing his plans to step down. In it, he referenced the fights in Wisconsin and Ohio to push back against legislation that guts the rights of workers to collectively bargain. There are already two candidates stepping up to compete for McEntee's seat, both from New York. New York Civil Service Employees Association President Danny Donahue has announced his intention to run, as well as AFSCME Secretary-Treasurer Lee Saunders.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Seems like things are kind of upside down. Choke with you someone to turn around.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of our program, therickSmithShow.com is the best place to go. Or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app and take the program on the go. So the Borowitz Report, GOP presidential frontrunner Herman Cain, today unveiled a new economic plan which would pay every woman in the United States to keep quiet. While Mr. Cain's new plan drew criticism from fiscal conservatives who claimed it would add to the deficit, the former pizza executive brushed it off, saying, "You can't put a price tag on getting the ladies to stop talking, if you know what I mean." He goes on to say, touting his proposal before a crowd of supporters in Davenport, Mr. McCain dubbed it his new plan as the 999 plan. I pay you $999, and you shut your damn pie hole. Elsewhere, billionaire Donald Trump said the winner of Sunday's New York Marathon should be disqualified because he was born in Kenya. So there you go. I don't know what's going on with poor Herman. Herman. I think we said this from the beginning. Once the first couple of allegations come out, you would see more, and you will see more. And, you know, I watched the little conference they had today. Gloria Allred seems to pop up everywhere. You got to give the woman credit. She is everywhere. But I love the description that the woman put out. She said, quote, instead of going to his office, because she came to him, she got fired from one job, she came to him looking for another at the behest of her boyfriend. So her boyfriend tells her, go ahead, go. Herman seemed to like you. Go see what Herman's, maybe Herman can help. So she sets up this meeting, goes to a hotel. He has her upgraded to this, to a suite. You know, the woman thought it was my boyfriend did it. No, it was the Herman. It was Herman who did it. So she said, you know, they went to dinner, got in the car, drove back toward the restaurant association. And she said that, you know, instead of going into the offices, he suddenly reached over and put his hand on her leg under her skirt and reached for her genitals. She said he also grabbed her head and brought it down towards little Herman, I guess. She said, I was very, very, very surprised and very shocked. I said, what are you doing? And she said, he said, I have a boyfriend. This isn't what I came here for. And Mr. Cain said, you want a job, right? He's entitled to innocent until proven guilty. But I am waiting for more of these claims to come forward. And it should be interesting. Now, in the District of Columbia, where this supposedly happened, where this allegedly happened, the law is pretty clear. Whoever engages in a sexual act or sexual conduct with another person and who should have known or reason to know that the act was committed without the other person's permission shall be imprisoned for no more than 180 days and, in addition, may be fined on an amount not exceeding $1,000. So if this is true, Herman could find himself in another office. Oh, Herman, what are we going to do with you? But here's the weird thing about it. It looks like Herman's raised over $2 million off of the allegations. And again, I guess you're going to find people who are going to throw into over it. Michelle Bachmann back in the news. Again, you know, you got to give Michelle credit. She's consistent. She came out at the Family Research Council. They had a big public speaking opportunity, and, well, you put a microphone in front of her face. She's out there saying, well, our nation needs to stop doing for people what they can do and should do for themselves. Self-reliance. If anyone will not work, nor should he eat. You know, go into the good biblical quote. Again, dog whisper politic. And to a degree, I agree with that. And I've said that. I think extended unemployment benefits should be a jobs program. What's interesting is the people who are holding up all of the jobs programs are people like her. So not only do they, now they're saying, well, if you're not going to work, you can't eat. There are no jobs available, and they're willing to do nothing to help. How does that work out? I mean, the very people who are holding up all progress are the very people like her who are the ones saying, well, if you don't work, you don't eat, but we're not going to help you find a job, even if they're not out there. No. Understand, for every job that's out there, they say that there are four applicants looking for that job. So it's not as easy as she would have you believe. She went on to say some other really kooky stuff. She said that she was the champion of light bulb freedom. She was the, you know, the liberty for light bulbs was her core conviction, which is kind of crazy. But I believe in liberty for light bulbs. What she's really trying to say is she doesn't believe in regulation. She doesn't believe in sanity. She doesn't believe in conserving energy. And she's pandering to that segment of the population that wants to drill, baby, drill. I'm not going there either. She also said that she would work to eradicate socialism. Got to get socialism out of the U.S. government, meaning those programs for the poor, those programs for the unemployed, those programs for seniors. Do away with that. We need to get rid of it. Get all that socialism out of it. Have good old-fashioned, you're on your own capitalism. She said that so many Republicans aspire to be frugal socialists, we can't restore liberty if the choice a year from now is between a socialist and a frugal socialist. So think about that for a second. I mean, you know, the crazies have pushed us in a direction where they want to go back to the good old days. The desperation class, lines of people begging for food to feed their kids, lines of people willing to work for food for their kids. And if we learned anything from the Great Depression, is that we'll work for food wasn't a low enough wage. But we are here in Columbus, Ohio, for the big vote tomorrow. And I'm really hoping tomorrow goes well. I'm hoping it's a big turnout. I'm hoping the big turnout produces a big victory and this and sending back this big steaming pile of issue number two back to the Kasich people. But what they put, and you got to give the right credit, they're not stupid. They threw this issue number three out there. So issue two comes out, and we're going to get working people to come up. You're going to get union people to get their friends and neighbors to say, hey, we believe in collective bargaining. So the radical right, with the big money of, you know, the Koch brothers, all the usual suspects, all the billionaire class, have put forth issue number three, which basically is they want to kill Obamacare. And basically it's going to hamper Ohio. It's going to handcuff the state of Ohio from setting up one of these insurance exchanges, setting up part of the Affordable Care Act that is going to come down the road. Now, understand, even if issue three passes, it's the Supreme Court who's going to decide this, not some ballot initiative in Ohio or Pennsylvania or anywhere else. So it's kind of weird that you've got this poorly written, ambiguous bill that they've put forward that they really want to Look, it is what it is. What the point here is they wanted to get all their crazy people out. They want to get all the T-twits to come out of the woodwork, show their faces in the sun, and cast a vote against issue number two. That's all this is about. But the problem with number three is that it will affect just about every health care law here in the state of Ohio. And understand that unintended consequences thing. The workers' comp system, the child enforcement, you name it. Mental health, school immunization, you name it, this piece of legislation, this is going to screw the state of Ohio up. But what it's meant to do, it's meant to bring people out of the woodwork and meant to get them out here against issue number two. And we're hoping that tomorrow will be a very, very energized day and a huge victory. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for the Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
One way you can tell that a bank is in trouble is that it suddenly starts buying full-page ads in newspapers to tell us what great shape it's in and what a fine job it's doing for our communities. Such a PR push is now being made by Bank of America, which, despite its happy face ads, is in a heap of hurt. How big of a heap? So big that it's trying to share the hurt with you and me. In the recent Wall Street collapse, B of A took advantage of the crisis to bulk up its empire. Using $45 billion in bailout money from us taxpayers, the giant gobbled up two troubled financial powers, investment house Merrill Lynch and mortgage hustler Countrywide Financial. It's now choking on those mergers, as well as its own executive incompetence. Its credit rating has been downgraded, its stock price has plummeted, its CEO is desperately trying to raise cash and save his job by firing 36,000 employees, and it has infuriated its own customers by trying to impose a $5 monthly fee on debit card users. Now, though, CEO Brian Moynihan has a dandy plan to lighten his load by dumping a big chunk of it on us taxpayers. He's trying to transfer a mess of bad investments now held by the Merrill Lynch subsidiary into B of A's consumer banking unit. Why? Because that unit has about $1 trillion in customer deposits that are insured by Uncle Sam. So if Merrill's sorry investments cause the banking unit to fail, the feds would be there to rescue it. A banking expert has commented that there is always an enormous temptation to dump the losers on the insured institutions. We should have fairly tight restrictions on that. This is Jim Hightower saying, fairly tight? We should have totally tight restrictions, as in, no, you cannot do that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
In just a couple hours, the Ohio voters are going to be going to the polls to repeal issue number two and they repeal SB 5. I wanted to look back and replay one of my interviews with Rick Kepler, a Teamster and a YouTube sensation. So here's my interview with Rick Kepler.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Number check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Yeah, I love some of these videos you see on YouTube. You get these guys with their little video camera, and they think they're going to be those two twits with the camera who dressed up like a pimp and a hooker and edited the video down to get the message they want. What I love is they go out there with their camera and they're all excited. Oh, we got someone saying something. Oh boy. And they post it all over the place. And the reality is it made them look even dumber than they actually are. And this, my next guest, one of those guys who was in the video, who the right wing goes, oh, we got him, gotcha. His name is Rick Kepler. He's a Teamster organizer. He was at the Capitol in Ohio, down in Columbus, and the T-Twizzlers brought their cameras around. Rick, thanks for taking time for me, buddy.
Hey, Rick. Nice to be on your show. Thanks, brother.
It seems like you're turning into a YouTube hero.
Hey, I just was watching those teabaggers give those teachers, the majority of people that they were teachers, and they were going around and just pissing off, making snide comments to them. You're killing us. You're stealing our tax money and all that stuff. And the teachers, of course, were doing what they instinctively wanted to do, try to teach them, and then I just got tired of the crap that they were feeding them. So when they came and got around me and asked me a question, well,
you let them have it.
And for those who on the video.
Yep, and for those who want to see the video, you can go to thericksmithshow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name. It'll take you there. And make sure you leave a comment as well. Let the T-Twizzlers know that there was no gotcha here. There was an educational moment. And I got to tell you, Rick, I thought you were right on. For me personally, I look at this situation, and this is government overreach. This is exactly what I thought the Tea Party was supposed to be fighting against.
Yeah, that's what my whole point was, is that, wait a minute, you guys are against big government. Here it is, that so-called statement. But here it is, the government, the state, taking rights away from workers. You defend the Constitution, but what the hell are you doing on the other side, But that's what they are, though, Rick. They're just a show for corporate America. Their agenda is no different than Wall Street's agenda, the Chamber of Commerce agenda. It's exactly, they're a corporate-sponsored group. They're not really grassroots.
Yeah, and pretty much what we've been saying all along. But even some of the people who say they believe in this stuff, because it's all they hear all day long. All they hear is right wing drivel, and all they hear is Limbaugh and Hannity. They're inundated with this pro corporate message that I'm sure as an organizer you've got to run up against quite often, even in the ranks of the Teamsters. Even
it was kind of funny. I was having an organizing meeting the other night, and I was kind of laying it out, but because it was a public sector group that works for the Lorain County courts. And so there was about 20 people there, and they're all nervous and scared of taking this step and everything. And I was telling them about this attack on labor and the attack on labor across the country at all these states with right to work legislation and just this whole corporate assault on our rights right now. And this, I made the term teabagger one time during that, when I was talking to them. And about an hour and a half later in the meeting, the woman stood up and said, I really take offense that I'm not a teabagger. I'm a Tea Party member, and I came here because I believe we need the union. And I just thought at that time, boy, are you confused, But she was one of these people who just, the boss pissed her off, and she just thought, no, I'm going to this union meeting. I've had it, but yet here she is, a huge supporter of the Tea Party,
Well, don't you think there's just this massive disconnect between reality and what they believe? Because for too long, and I get this all the time in my life, people, they're angry. And I, right when this whole Tea Party thing started, I was right there. I was saying, yeah, I'm ticked off. I'm angry that we're getting screwed. Our jobs are leaving the country. My 401k is a 200.5. Everything that I've been promised has been a lie. I'm ticked off. But I'm not mad at the government. I'm mad at Wall Street. I'm mad at corporate America. I'm mad at...
Yeah, that's the thing that got going for you ever since Reagan came in and said, the problem is the government. And so don't look at Wall Street, because that was what he was there for. He was their little pet poodle. But so that's been the whole message all along. Oh, the government's too big. The government's taking our rights. The government, and it's a simple shell game. Look over here. Don't look at who's really ripping you off.
Look at the shiny...
Yeah, I got to tell you, Rick, as an organizer, I cut out articles sometimes, and then because it'll hit right to the heart of the matter. And C CEO of Goodyear right here in Akron. I'm in Barberton, right next to Akron here in Ohio. And I cut it out from the business section. This guy got up there. He was the CEO. Gibraltar was his name. And he was speaking at a round table with a bunch of other CEOs and Wall Street types. And he said this, and then this was the quote, "Until we drive the wages of the American worker down to those of the Mexicans, we cannot remain competitive in this global economy." That's their game plan. They don't hide it. It's not conspiratorial. That is what's going on. They do want to turn America into a third world country. And then when Warren Buffett comes along and says, "Hey, boys, there is a class war going on, and my class is winning," we got to respond to that. But sometimes, Rick, I wonder about our labor leaders. They don't even come out and talk class war stuff anymore. They just, well, you know, get online, do a petition. And thank God Wisconsin is showing the way down there, brother.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this as that spark for the new progressive movement. I'm saying that this is this generation's PATCO, and I'm hoping that we respond the right way. I'm hoping that my children look back on this and say, you know, Dad did the right thing. Because we're going out to Wisconsin, going to take the show out there next week to show support and to bring the message back. But at the end of the day, it's coming back to this is our PATCO.
Well, you recall when Reagan busted the PATCO, and in case anybody doesn't remember, there was only two unions who endorsed Reagan. They all knew his history of being a union buster.
Well, the PATCO PATCO and the Teamsters.
And us, the Teamsters, right. And so, and he screwed the PATCO, and then he told us, "Oh, I'll help you with deregulation." The Carter started, actually, but then, you know, he stuck it to us, too.
Yep.
But at the same time, we all looked back and went, well, you know, Wayne Kirkland and his crew, why wasn't there a mass outpouring then? You know, let's take, you know, and we still look back and go, man, we kind of missed our moment back there. But now, here's a new chance. You know, like you're just talking about, this has got to be the time. This ain't just Wisconsin, Ohio. This is all over the country.
Yeah.
This corporate assault on our rights, you know, inalienable rights.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Rick Kepler, our YouTube hero. You got to see this video. Go to therickSmithShow.com and click on Rick Kepler's name. It's going to take you right to that video. Of course, leave a response for the people over at The Blaze and the other people who've put this up. You know, Rick, in looking at this moment, I'm saying that right here, right now, this is where the fight is, because if we lose Wisconsin, Ohio is going to be next. Michigan, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
They'll fall like dominoes.
Just like
absolutely.
Dominoes. And I guess the question I've got for you, here in Pennsylvania, 51% of union members voted for Wall Street's Senator Pat Toomey. 51%. I asked some of my union friends who voted for Republicans in this last election how sorry they are now. And I look at Ohio, my home state, and say, you know, I remember a very proud, rich union heritage. What happened in Ohio?
Same thing. Our union brothers decided that they, I hate to go this direction, but I looked at that last election as just white backlash. And a lot of people were pissed off about Obama because he didn't do enough and were thinking, and I still got concerns about what direction he's going, but I can't believe what happened at all these states that were always blue went red, you know, with the governors and the legislatures, and boy, now, you know, we're feeling the effects. Okay, working people, you voted for these guys for whatever reason, but I got a feeling what it is, but, you know, and now they're going to just take it out on your hide. Well, how's it feel to have that, you know, how's your vote do for you right now? Because
yeah.
Now they're coming after you, the patrons there, Wall Street, and their people they throw money to, the Republicans, and in the Democratic Party, Rick. We've got corporatists in the Democratic Party, too. This ain't just a Republican versus Democrat.
Oh, no. You know, here's the thing. I'm one of the biggest critics of Bill Clinton. I think the whole NAFTA thing was what you were talking about earlier, about bringing us down to the Mexican level. In fact, if you read Thomas Friedman's book, he talks about the great leveling off, which is,
yeah,
you know, going to bring the Mexicans up to $5 an hour, going to bring us down to $5 an hour. And the whole world's loving it.
I don't think Clinton was any friend of labor. He did a lot to harm us, and he did a lot that led to this meltdown, too, with getting rid of Glass-Steagall, and Obama surrounding himself with a bunch of Clintonites, and so I'm looking at what he's doing, too, you know, and it's going to be ourselves, like you said, Rick. This is our defining moment. What's labor going to do? I mean, you know, you can cower down and adjust to this attack, or else you can fight back.
Yep, absolutely.
You know?
Rick Kepler, I appreciate your time. Again, our YouTube hero, you're going to want to see this video. Go to therickSmithShow.com and click on Rick's name. It'll take you right there. Brother, I appreciate your time. Keep up the fight, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, you keep swinging too, Rick. Call me anytime, brother.
All righty. Beautiful. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'll be working as long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
On June 25, 1938, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt signed the Fair Labor Standards Act into law. Viewed as one of the final pieces of legislation of FDR's New Deal and the single most worker-friendly piece of legislation ever written, the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 was a victory not only for labor unions, but for workers, families, and children across the country. FDR called the new law the most far-reaching, far-sighted program for the benefit of workers ever adopted in this or any other country. This visionary piece of legislation put a ceiling over hours and a floor under wages, mandating a 44-hour work week, a 25-cent minimum wage, and time and a half for overtime. The Fair Labor Standards Act was later amended to 40 hours per week and 40 cents per hour. The law also excluded children from working dangerous jobs and set standard conditions for the employment of child workers to avoid continued exploitation of children. The Fair Labor Standards Act has been changed or amended at least 43 different times. These alterations have been used both to expand worker protections, such as raising the minimum wage, prohibiting age discrimination, and requiring equal pay, and to restrict and take away protections such as the Taft-Hartley Act and the 2004 Fair Pay Amendment. Today, we take the 40-hour work week, minimum wages, overtime, and child labor protections for granted. But up until the passage of the Fair Labor Standards Act, workers were at the mercy of their employers, and children were dying in industrial accidents. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Tomorrow's historic vote is just a couple hours away. I also wanted to look back and the conversation I had with Mickey Sergo back in March as the SB5 fight continued and folks from around the country came to rally on the Capitol steps. Here's my interview with Mickey Sergo.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. The Rick Smith Show.
From the Washington Post today, during a state house interview marked by the sound of, you know, those pesky protesters, those people outside screaming that they want their rights. Ohio Senate President Tom Niehaus said it's great to see so many people willing to come out and get heard, but it doesn't affect our resolve. So basically what he told the thousands of people in Columbus, Ohio today is basically screw you. We don't care what you people want. We have our ideology. And I guess what would you expect from our friends in the Republican Party? To find out what's going on the ground, I got Mickey Spurgo. He's on the ground in Columbus, Ohio. Mickey, what's going on there tonight?
Well, it's calmed down right now. We were at the rally today, and the numbers were legit. There was a good 15 to 20,000 folks out on the lawn. Now, they kept coming in and out. Folks would take off work, come in. So the crowds were steady at around 15,000 today, and they had their voices heard today.
So what do you think the Ohio Senate President Tom Niehaus saying, you know, it's great that they came out, but we don't care what they have to say. We're going to do what we want to do anyway.
Well, I mean, he can say that, but by seeing the resolve of these folks in Ohio, they're dug in also, and they're going to do what they have to do. They're going to, if it does get passed tomorrow, they're going to get a ballot. They're going to put a ballot resolution to put it on the ballot. They're poised and ready to get the 220,000 signatures that'll put it on the ballot. And look, they took polls. There was polls up and down the papers I read here today, everywhere from 60 to 70% of people in Ohio that are totally against what they're doing. So if this does get on the ballot as a ballot referendum, it's definitely going to fail on their end.
Yeah, I look at this and I say, you know, I understand the right-wing extreme, the Tea Party mentality. I get it, but at some point, don't you have to wake up and see what reality has in store for you? Because I think this is going to be their demise.
And you know what? They put an amendment to the bill today, which you want to talk about outrage, which took away the binding arbitration rights of the police officers and firefighters today. So they just didn't stop with the public employees as a whole. They went after the police and firefighters directly today. And if you would have seen the firefighters at the rally today and the police officers, which, by the way, some of them supported this guy, you would see that it's starting to come a little unwound for them. Some of the Republicans are getting a little squeamish today. Some did turn, but not enough. I think they probably got the votes to pass it through. But like I said, they're going to get this on the ballot. And I think their resolve to put it on there, they will make it. And it will get shot down in Ohio. And it's just an amazing sight to see this many people coming together.
You know, I got to tell you, Mickey, you know, I look at this and I go, you know, the Republicans ran on the platform that they were going to create jobs, that they, you know, they weren't going to be as divisive as those Democrats were. And yet all I see is insanity coming out of these people. It makes no sense to me.
And you saw what happened in Wisconsin today. They even tried to shut them out of their own capital, where a judge says, you can't do that. You got to open the doors. I mean, it's just amazing where these capitals are supposed to be for the people, you know, by the people, for the people, and yet they want to shut out the protesters because they're with organized labor. Just amazing.
It is. You know, we were in Madison for a week. We were there for the big protest, 100,000 to 150,000 people in the streets. I got to be honest, probably the most peaceful environment I've ever been in. In fact, I was looking for union thugs, and all I found was a grandmother handing out cookies and muffins. In Ohio, you know, and I'm from Cleveland, and I've proudly worn the moniker of union thug occasionally. Is it as friendly there in Columbus?
Oh, very peaceful, very, very, very peaceful, and I think that frustrates them. A matter of fact, it wasn't just union workers today, and this is the first time I've seen clergy. I mean, a lot of clergy members there today supporting the workers. You know, and we're from Pennsylvania. Our group there said, about time. I mean, we saw priests. We saw of all denominations there today supporting the workers, which was nice to see. And it's long overdue that other groups start joining the labor protesters, because what they're doing is totally wrong. It's against most religions if you see what they're doing. And it's about time that they've joined the fight.
Yeah, I've seen yesterday. I saw something was passed, and maybe you'll have a little bit of insight for me. That they passed a bill to do away with PLAs and prevailing wage in building contracts. And I'm looking at that and I'm going, well, why would you do something that stupid? Because that's what's actually creates a building construction industry in your state, keeps it healthy, keeps it vibrant, and actually, to be honest, the prevailing wage helps keep industry in your state. Why would you want to get rid of that?
Well, like the president of the AFL-CIO in Ohio said today, he said, look, this isn't about, you know, budgets. This isn't about anything. This is payback time in Ohio. I mean, he's coming after every union. It doesn't matter who you are. They're coming after him. They want to basically silence them. They want to make sure that the roads to re-elections for all of them will be paved. And if they can silence the labor movement, they have taken a major obstacle, you know, out of the way for all of them to be re-elected. They know that, and I think everybody here knows that, and that's why this is so important in Columbus.
You know, and that's an excellent point you make, Mickey, because, you know, in Wisconsin, I don't know if you – I'm sure you heard the Coke Walker phone call.
Oh, yes.
Where he basically came out and pretty much said what we all knew, but just confirmed what we already knew, that this was political payback. Nothing more, nothing less, had nothing to do with budgets, had nothing to do with the health of the state. It had everything to do with killing a political enemy.
And that's what it's all about. It really, really has nothing to do with the budget, especially here in Ohio. From talking with the folks here, it has nothing to do with the budget. What's ironic, this wouldn't even take effect till 2012. I mean, a lot of folks don't know that, what they're trying to do. So how is it correct fixing the budget this year? Just look at everything he's doing. It has nothing to do with what he says. It has everything to do with breaking these unions. It has everything to do with silencing these voices. And today they were heard. I was impressed. Being from Pennsylvania, we've had our rallies. We've been there. But I was very impressed with what they did today. It was, like you said, very peaceful, very well organized, and their messages were heard inside those chambers.
Let me ask you this, because I said in Wisconsin when I talked to folks there, this is the front line of the class war. This is the place where we stop these type of assaults, or it's the first in the domino that takes us all down. I saw Wisconsin, Ohio as the dominoes coming to Pennsylvania. In looking at what's going on, do you think this is going to be stopped here?
Well, it's hard to say, but you're absolutely right. The fights are state by state, but this is more of a national issue more than people think. I mean, the battles are going to be fought in every individual state. They had a game plan. They're following their game plan, and I'm surprised that people are surprised what they're doing. Because I'm not as surprised as a lot of folks. They said that a lot of times they were going to do this in some of those states. So their game plan is to take each individual state, you know, try to divide the unions, try to beat the unions. And if they get them to fall, of course it'll come to Pennsylvania. Of course it's going to come to some of the other states. You know, if they can take us out in Wisconsin, Indiana, you know, Ohio, sure, by all means. Now, we're a little different animal in Pennsylvania. I think we've got a lot of the, like you said, the Tea Party crazies, like they have in some of these states. We've got a lot more moderate Republicans, you know, that will support us in the state of Pennsylvania. And I think a lot of folks know that. Look, you can take Ohio and see how they were unified today, okay? You can take Wisconsin and see how they're unified. I just got a feeling if this were to come to Pennsylvania, you magnify it by threefold. If that's what they want, I think the workers of Pennsylvania will be ready.
I sure hope so. And I guess the question that you kind of answered it, but do you think that this is going to be that epiphany that union workers have, that moment of clarity where, you know, here in the state of Pennsylvania, I'm not sure if you know, but 51% of union members voted for Pat Toomey.
Yes.
A good number of union members voted for Tom Corbett. I'm sure in Ohio, a good number of union members voted for John Kasich. Are you starting to see people who are having buyer's remorse?
Well, they had a guy that spoke today. They actually had a union member speak today who voted for this governor because he said he didn't know that he would be this radical in his approach. He said, and he got up and apologized to all those people today and said, I'm sorry, I'm a registered Republican. I voted for this guy. I didn't know he was going to do what he's doing. And I think you're seeing that in a lot of places. But let me say this. You know, it seems that the labor movement has come full circle. You know, back in the 60s, you know, we fought these same battles. We had to fight for every inch of survival. It seems we've come to that point again, and this may be one of the best things that ever happened to organized labor and to the middle class and to the working families of this country. Maybe it is the wake-up call that we've all been waiting for, because it seems to be unifying. If you saw today, they came from Toledo, you know, Cincinnati, Cleveland. They came from all over. And to see that kind of unification, and then remember, this was a Tuesday, so most of them had to take off work to be here. So to see that kind of unification, maybe we have come full circle, and maybe this is the wake-up call that everybody's been waiting for.
I'm sure hoping, because, you know, at the end of the day, and I've said this a number of times on the program, it's about your job. And I vote pocketbook issues first and foremost. All of those divisive things that the Republicans use to slice and dice us don't mean all that much to me. I can deal with those in my home. I'm hoping, I really am hoping that people will take this and say, finally, we know what the Republican Party is all about.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they came in and said they were going to be moderates. They're not moderates. I mean, we all know that now. I mean, if we do, we believed a lot of our members and a lot of Democrats believed in what the Tea Party was saying. And, you know, now they don't. Now they saw what these folks are really like. They saw what they really want. And it's all about power. That you can just sum it up in one word. It's all about power, and that they're looking to keep it.
So last minute I got for you. Where is this going tomorrow? What's going to happen towards the weekend? Your thoughts?
Tomorrow they're going to be pushing the bill through. It looks like they're going to vote on it at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. there's going to be another rally. They moved the bill back today, from today because of so many people. There's what a lot of folks thought. So tomorrow they'll push the bill through, and then the real fight starts in Ohio. That's when they'll start working to get the petitions going. They'll start the door-to-door to get people to sign the petitions to make it a ballot referendum, and that's where the real fight will be.
Any chance of like in Wisconsin, the fabulous 14 who took off to Illinois, any chance of any Democratic maneuvering?
Well,
or in Ohio, do they have such an overwhelming
number? They don't have that same type. The one guy told us today, no, we can't run to the safe haven of Illinois. They don't have that type of laws as far as the, you know, a quorum, and they just got the numbers right now, so they can't pull that one off. But the Democrats, watching the news tonight, they said they're going to try to drag it as much as they can with questions, but it will go to vote tomorrow by the looks of things.
And that, as you've said, it will be when the real fight begins. Mickey,
yes,
I appreciate
it. And they made it perfectly clear, Rick, that this fight's not done after tomorrow. That's only the beginning of the fight, and that's where labor's always done its best. So it's, you know, it's put up or shut up time.
It's back up against the wall. Tomorrow night, can you give us a call back and let us know what's going on?
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll get somebody to give you a call. I'm heading back to Pennsylvania tomorrow, but we'll give somebody that's going to be on the ground here to give you a call.
Thank you so much, Mickey. I appreciate it. You know, I look at this and I got to tell you, it's exciting times. It's going to give us the opportunity, to stand up, unite, fight back against, you know, really something very toxic. But again, I think it's going to educate. It's going to be that moment that the Republicans weren't planning on. They were not planning on giving this educational moment, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to take a quick break. Your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this.
Drowning in crafty lies. Save the USA and resume the size of mine. I'm taking all our money and shipping it offshore.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed her permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get the Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children. And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, go to the website, download the podcast, or if you've got a smartphone, download the Stitcher app. So it didn't take very long. They just put up these larger-than-life statues of Ronald Reagan. It looks like someone pulled it down. The statue was leaning to the left, they said. This one out in California. I was kind of hoping it was the one there in D.C., but not so much. That'll still be the latest dog walking park for the folks who were the victims of Patco. Interesting story today from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. They had held a conference where the Chinese foreign policy expert, Yan Yatong, had some pretty interesting discussions. He said, leadership is very important. My understanding is that the Chinese leaders feel it's relatively easier to deal with Republican leaders than the Democratic leaders because Republican leaders, get this, ignore public opinion. They don't listen to the people. Republicans do what they like, so we know what they want. He goes on to say, and Democrats, well, they really serve the people's interests and follow the people's opinion. And when people change their opinion, they change their opinion, so we can never predict. And he went on to talk about about the Bush years, saying, we knew where we stood with Bush. And he wasn't very popular in the U.S., but at least we knew where we stood. We knew where our business opportunities lie. We knew he wasn't going to do those things like go to the WTO with those trade cases. We knew he wasn't going to, wasn't going to cause us much grief. And he says, look, we had a stable relationship with Bush. Obama, we can't have a stabilized relationship with him. He's worried too much about what people think. He also went on to stress that, the U.S. and China will continue to compete economically and educationally. But it's his thought that China's not going to lead militarily. He said in the next 10 years, China will probably catch up to the U.S. in terms of the economy. But he thinks it'll be another 20 years before they catch up militarily. And, he had this thought that, we probably won't be like the U.S. and the Soviet Union. Maybe a little bit different. It's not going to be that kind of competition. Don't bet on it. It's nice to allay the fears of the people here. I'm telling you, they're in place for world domination. And you got to be honest, our military-industrial complex, they've got to be salivating over the opportunity of having another Cold War type buildup, spending more money that we don't have, more money on guns instead of butter. And especially since you look at the numbers, and last week we talked a little bit about the report released by the folks over at Citizens for Tax Justice, who pointed out their examination of 280 of the Fortune 500 companies, where 30 of these major multinational U.S. corporations paid zero income tax over the last 3 years, as they made $160 billion profit. They also found that 35% tax rate that the Republicans love to whine and carry on and complain about, oh, we got the highest tax rate in the world. Turns out these 280 corporations, they paid about half of that top rate. So, again, crying tears. The defense industry did pretty well. In fact, they paid an annual tax rate of about 17.5%, which placed them put them in a sector of the least taxed industries. Boeing, for instance, we actually paid Boeing. You talk about the lowest tax rate. We actually paid them 1.8%. And Boeing's one of those companies that are out there saying, oh, we just can't compete. We need to lower the tax rate. We need a corporate tax cut because, we need more. How much more than nothing are you looking for? Are you looking for more than a 1.8% of your profits being paid back to you? Is that it? And, you look at this whole, and again, bringing it back here to Columbus, Boeing on the front lines of another labor battle. And as this thing goes forward there, as the administrative law judge takes this through, the hope is that labor fights this back and we see a we see a positive decision. But, you know, Boeing, just it's just absolutely amazing to me. And you look at these numbers, it's just mind-boggling. While you're talking about cutting almost $1 billion in education in Pennsylvania, hundreds of millions of dollars in education in Ohio and Wisconsin and states across this country, we're talking about gutting education. You've got the defense industry reaping huge benefits. In fact, we're paying them. So you can bet, you can absolutely bet that they're hoping there is another Cold War type build up to where, hey, we're spending more money on guns and less money on butter because, you know what, those old people, we don't need them. Those kids, they don't need education. Those nearly 50 million people now living below the poverty line, leave them behind. Especially when you look at the fact that that class, the top 1%, they own 70%, and I talked about this earlier, 70% of all the financial assets in this country, 70%. And between the years 2002 and 2006, they took 3/4 of the growth. So, you know, you hear this whining about, well, you know, you're talking about class war, you're talking about redistribution of wealth. Yeah, pretty much. When over a four-year span, 3/4 of the economic growth, 3/4 of the economic pie goes to 1% of the people, there is a serious problem with distribution. Call it, figure out how you want to do it, whatever, call it whatever, but at the end of the day, that's not good for an economy. That's not producing the mass consumption you need to run an economy. And especially when you look at the period from 79 to 2007, when that top 1% saw their after-tax income grow by 275%. Again, you know, you look at the bottom. It grew by 18%. So you're stealing from the bottom to feed the top. Where's today's Robin Hood? And when you look at the numbers, I mean, the numbers don't lie. Just don't lie. When you see the top 1% owning 40% of the nation's wealth, there's a serious problem. When they're taking 1/4 of the national income, there's a problem. There's an absolute problem. So here in Columbus, tomorrow the big vote, and back home the big vote. I hope everyone gets out and votes. It's so important that we exercise our rights. And, you know, across the country, what we've been seeing is this attack on voters' rights, this attack on people exercising their right with this whole voter ID thing. And again, another one of these problems that really didn't exist, but we need to solve it. We need to solve the problem that doesn't exist. And you look at states across the country, states that have these strict voter ID laws have more than tripled this year alone. With Kansas, Rhode Island, Wisconsin, Alabama, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, all putting into place these very restrictive laws. You know, Pennsylvania is going to be on that list, I think, in 2012 if we don't do something to stop it. But, you know, you look at all of these states that now have these very restrictive laws, South Carolina being one of my favorites, where Nikki Haley said, well, you know, I'll be happy to go take anyone to the polls. I'll be happy to make sure that we can get them an ID. I'll take them to, and then she reneges on it. And the chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, a guy named Steve Israel, representative from New York, said on Friday that the DCCC is planning a major voter protection initiative in response to make sure that every American has the right to vote. And my response to that would be, hey, Steve, where were you months ago? Why didn't we stop this? That's why I think tomorrow is important here in Ohio to stop the assault on collective bargaining rights. And I'm hoping the folks here in Ohio get out, vote early, get everything tallied. I'd love to see double digit numbers here because look, across the country, doing everything they can do to make sure that you don't have the ability, the right to vote. Quick numbers. Listener sent, Rick sent the top 10 CEO pay. And I just want you to think about this, you know, before we go to the polls tomorrow when you start thinking about, you're talking class warfare, Rick. You're talking redistribution of wealth. Remember what the Chinese foreign policy expert said. Republicans, they don't care what the people think. They stick to their ideology. They stick to themselves. I look at this guy, number three on the CEO list, a guy named Donald Stebbins. He got a 718% raise last year. His headquarters is 30 miles southwest of the Highland Park community that we talked about. Average income, $18,000. They had to turn off the streetlights because they couldn't afford to pay the electric bill. They had to pull the poles out of the ground and sell them. What kind of place do we live when that kind of thing happens? That's why tomorrow, go out, cast your vote, participate in your democracy, and let's hope for the best here in Ohio. And I'm hopeful. I'm anxious. Tomorrow we'll be back here in Ohio, right here from Columbus, hopefully talking about a big victory. So hang in there. We'll talk to you tomorrow, and get out and vote.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial.